Well, everybody, we're optimistic, but Sergeant Parks, he's going to keep it real. How's everybody doing today? Yes, 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 yes. We want to welcome you to Let's Do a Radio, found on the homepage of doitallinthemall.com. Everyone is welcome, especially all of our first-time listeners worldwide. Yes, sir. Yes, our worldwide listeners. We love to hear them because we have a map, and it's just turning all kind of ways in dark blue. And so everybody all over the world, call somebody, get somebody on the line that you know all over around you, and have them call in so we could have that map just as blue as it wants to be. Today is Thursday, July 7, 2021. This is your hostess, Miss Inez, CEO and fashion designer of Anais Falco Designs, broadcasting to you worldwide. And our guest speaker today is Sergeant James Park, who is always keeping it real from Yakima, Washington, with the topic of the day, reparations, putting it all together. If you have a product or business, you can bring it to doitallinthemall.com, where all of our entrepreneurs can be found under the client's carousel on the homepage of doitallinthemall.com, which is owned and operated by Sharon Salisbury Frazier, and she is also out of Yakima, Washington. And she has been in business for over 13 years, and doitallinthemall.com is a safe and secure 24/7 online shopping mall of over 5,000 stores for all of your needs. You can shop for anything you need, all while listening to entertainment, all in the comfort of wherever you may be. You can make a difference worldwide. So take a tour and shop, and please join us at 845-241-9985. Again, 845-241-9985. And today's topic is reparations. We're going to talk about 40 acres and a mule, along with other things today. So go ahead, give us a call so you can talk to us, talk about us, talk with us, because we're going to hear Oscar Brown on 40 Acres and a Mule, and then we'll be right back on the other side.
Let's see what one of us exiles in the person of Oscar Brown Jr. has to say about his condition.
While we're on that subject, I'd like to take this opportunity to present the following open letter that was pressed into my hands for special delivery by a man on my street. And yeah, he come now. If I'm not mistaken, I once raved back during that short spell I spent in school, where every slave set free was supposed to get the poor slave 40 acres and a mule. Now, ain't no telling how much work was done by my ancestors under slavery's rule, but sure as hell the total got to run at least 40 acres and a mule. Now, I'm not saying this to see folks sweat, because I'm not bitter, neither am I cruel, but ain't nobody paid for slavery yet. About my 40 acres and my mule. We had a promise. That was taken back. And when we hollered, it was hush, be cool. Well, me, I'm being rowdy, hot, and black. I want my 40 acres and my mule. Don't tell me not to get myself upset. Don't look at me like I'm some sort of ghoul. Just answer quietly, when do I get my damn 40 acres and my mule? No thanks, I'll take my own self out to lunch. No thanks, I'll dig me my own swimming pool and lay and play around with my own bunch. If I get 40 acres and a mule, cause interest gotta go on just like rent. I may be crazy, but I ain't no fool. 100 years of debt at 10% per year, per 40 acres and per mule. Now, add that up. Ooh, look at that. No wonder y'all call great-grandma Jewel. Yeah, just pay me that and call the whole thing square. Yes, Lordy, 40 acres and I'm huge.
Give me mine, 40 acres and what, a mule? Why does it have to be a mule? Why can't we get what we're due? What belongs to us? What was stolen, taken away illegally? Well, this is where the discussion is going to begin about today. After we hear Back Together, get ready for that discussion on reparations and putting it all together when we return and join in with Sergeant Parks and Keeping It Real. And you can call us at 845-241-9985 after you hear Amorphis Kalani Back Together. I love who we are when we ain't back together. Yes, sir. Commercial.
We do not own the rights to any information or music you hear at Let's Do It Radio.
No, we don't. But what we do own is the mall, and we hope you're shopping.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you are shopping at doitallinthemall.com. Why? Because a percentage of the proceeds will go back into our communities and help redevelop those same communities, making our lives better. Women and men have been coming together by shopping to make a difference in our communities. And won't you join us today? Again, shop doitallinthemall.com.
Yes, sir. And our guest this evening is none other than Sergeant Parks, and he's keeping it real, and we want to welcome our Let's Do It Radio Land listeners, and we have a full evening of reparations, putting it all together. Our caller number is 845-241-9985. Again, it's 845-241-9985. Dial those digits and join in the conversation with us this evening. Sergeant Parks, welcome, welcome, welcome. How are you doing today? How was your fourth? How you doing, sir? How you doing? How you doing? How you doing?
Hey, well, you know, it's been very hot, but I am still here. I'm present and accounted for.
All right. That's what we want to hear, present and accounted for. So, yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, who else do we have on the line today? 0901, mask who that is. Let me know who you are and where you're calling from.
Sergeant Raymond Miller from Seattle, Washington, Marysville, Washington.
Hey, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing wonderful, thank you. How are you?
Good.
How's it going, Ray?
Hey, James, how you doing?
Hey, man, I'm blessed. I am blessed.
Yep. We all are.
And then we also have, yes, and then we also have on the line, who she's probably going to be quiet, is Miss Sharon Frazier as well. So I don't know if she wants to say hello, as she just came back from a very long vacation. Miss Sharon, how are you this evening?
I'm wonderful. How is everybody?
Good, good, good. Welcome, welcome,
well,
welcome
good.
To this evening's topic.
I'm doing fine.
Reparations.
I'm doing fine,
yes. Good.
Well,
good,
I'm
good, good,
I'm
good.
Ready to hear this topic.
Go ahead and take it away, Sergeant Parks.
Well, you know, I was thinking about
when he starts like that.
I was thinking, you know, I'm always thinking some bone brain things and stuff, but I just try to, you know, see where the conscience is and what's going on and stuff. So I was skating the net or skimming the net or whatever you call it, and I ran across a good topic on reparations. Seems to me a lot of people want to dodge the facts of reparations, so I thought that would be a good topic to talk about amongst other topics that we'll be talking about today. So I'm glad Raymond is aboard. And one of the segments in the middle of the program, hopefully we're going to be able to have people to call in and talk about, well, what the heck are you doing in your community? Why am I here complaining about what's happening? What am I doing about it? And see what's going on around the world, around the United States, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we got some interesting topics. We go from reparations to Scottie Pippen. So, where would you like to start, Sergeant Parks?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, since Raymond is joining us, and I specifically call Raymond and stuff because he has the latest poop, you know, what is taking place as far as some in-depth. See, Raymond is far, he got more information. And in fact, I think the guy used to work for the CIA or somebody. He got a lot of information and stuff that we normally don't have. So I had to call Raymond in and stuff to talk about some of the things that are taking place that really, really is affecting black people, you know. But, Raymond, you can stay as long as you can stay on, you know, to talk about some of the things that's going on with you and some of the things that we're going to be talking about today. I know that you're up to speed on it.
Okay.
Go ahead, Raymond.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the one thing I want to say, we're talking about reparations. I call it back pay for those who have been in prison and held captive in this country without pay for 402 years now, that we haven't been. We were freed in 1863 or 1865, depending on who you want to listen to, and what day of the week. But for all that time, from 1619 to 1863 or 1865 to 2021, we haven't gotten our pay. We haven't gotten our back pay. We worked it. They said, okay, you could be free or Emancipation Proclamation, where you can not have you let out of prison. We're going to let you out of prison, but we ain't going to give you no money for all the work you've done to build this country, to make it the richest country, the most influent, the largest military budget. And we could send $10 billion a year to other countries like Israel, or $3 billion to Ukraine, and billions and billions of dollars to people all around the world, and we can't pay those people that were held captive in this country for the last 402 years without I don't use the word reparation anymore. I say back pay. I want my back pay, and with interest.
Mm-hmm.
And so pay me my money.
There you go.
Give me my money. You made the country got this start, and say you weren't born. Oh, we weren't born. I wasn't born in 1619. Your ancestors were here, and you're still living off. You got the big house. You're still living in the big house. We built the big house. You live in it. You're still living in the big house. You're still benefiting from that White House built by slaves, built by captives, built by those who were imprisoned in this country, held without regard to their freedom. They couldn't go where they wanted to go, couldn't go to the bathroom when you wanted to go, couldn't do anything you wanted to go to. They can come to your house, take your wife, your children, your husband away, and sell them off to anybody at any given time, and you won't never see them again. And so we're here. Hmm. We want our back pay. We want our back pay with interest. You can keep the mule if you want to, but I want my money, and make sure you just give me my money that we are due, and give us on a footing. And you look at every economic wealth, every other thing, for every $10,000, $100,000 that our European brothers in this country and sisters have in this country, for wealth that they accumulated, ancestral wealth, for every $100,000, we got about $1,000. So, just give us our money. We've been putting this bill in the legislature since I think the first time it went in was in 1974 or 1975. I think it passed the House this year. It's sitting over in the Senate, and when they won't take it up. But and they're not talking about it. And the bill doesn't call for reparation. The bill calls for the study of reparations, the word that I don't like anymore, for the women we were imprisoned in this country, held captive against our will, and worked in the slave day in and day out without pay. And so, just pay the money.
Give us what is due us. Give me mine. Give me ours. Shoot.
Yep.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes. It's only fair. I mean, you've done it with others. The Japanese. They did it with the Japanese. They gave them, when they were in prison, they put them in concentration camps. They gave them money, and that was like in 1940s. they paid them, and they won't give us a cent.
Because
we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps when we don't have no boots.
Hmm. Nothing to lace them. That's the truth. That's the truth. The gospel truth right there. They don't want to give black people do anything. They don't want to. And I was reading under one of the clips, and it says black billionaires, blacks are deprived of equal wealth. Gotta love the irony. I was reading some of the comments. It's like, okay, so, and then somebody was saying on another one, I mean, it was just like, okay, I didn't work in the White House, so why should these people who are current get what was due? It wasn't my fault that they were there. No, but it's your people's fault that they were there. You know, it's just put your own money to work. I'm not paying out anything. I'm poor and had nothing to do with slavery.
So you're still benefiting from the result of slavery. You got the big house. You got to still living in the big house. You inherited your ancestors' wealth, and now you got to pay the debt. You also inherit, not only did you inherit your ancestors' wealth, but you also inherited their debt. So you need to pay
that
debt off. Or give the house back. Or we can go tear it down.
I agree
100%. You see, the way I look at it and stuff is that everything that's taking place now is to deny not only, you know, a lot of people of color the right to vote. They don't want us to vote. Why? They think that if we vote, that it's going to give us more access to all of this wealth, you know. And at the end of the day, all of these millionaires and billionaires don't pay no taxes, you know. And just everyday starving people, I guess we're just supposed to starve. But it's not, it's not across the board that I'm talking about. But we just need a little justice. You know, that first clip, Inez, is with Bob Johnson. He's a founder of BET. Mm-hmm. He talks about $14 trillion of reparations. Maybe we can listen to that and then talk about it on the other side. There are three clips that he's talking about the reparations on and stuff. So, you know.
Mm-hmm.
James, though, could I just say something? This is Raymond once again.
Yeah.
Can we make sure that we, one thing we need to do is to get the listeners here, we need to talk to Congress, and what we really need to talk to is our senators to get them to pass some legislation. They begin this committee to review and can come back with recommendations to Congress on how to do this. But we need to be talking to, we can talk all we want to ourselves, but until we get the people who in Congress who votes on this stuff to do something about it, to get them to realize that the people want action on this, we're not going to get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to make sure that we talk to your senators. Everybody got two in the Congress, the Senate. Talk to them, and not only that, but get your relatives and your friends to talk to that live in other states, like in Wyoming. You got friends in Wyoming, or you got friends in Mississippi, or wherever you got friends at, get them to talk to their senators as well. Because I can tell you right now, my senators in Washington State, we can talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to vote for it. We know it's going to come, so we need to get everybody to talk to their senators. I know what my senators are going to do. If it comes out on the floor and it's opportunity,
Congress,
they're going to vote for it.
Mm-hmm.
In Congress,
okay,
so
go talk to your
senators and your congresspeople, and they'll tell you,
Raymond,
this is what you want.
Raymond,
yeah,
maybe you and I can design a show during Keeping It Real, so that we can try and reach some people, and maybe you can educate us on just how to do that. A lot of people don't even know how to do that. If you talk about getting in contact with some. Hell, a lot of people don't even know how to get in contact with their own city government. You know,
that's one of the things I was going to talk about. What we're going to do when we get to the community piece today. That's one of the things I'm going to talk about is that your local elected officials So yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
We can have a show on how to get in contact with your elected officials, not only at the national level but at the local level as well, because the people believe in running for the president. But I'm going to tell you that your water commissioner and your electric commissioner and the people who run in your parks and your recreations have more mm-hmm. more sway over your everyday life than the president does. So we got to look at those local officials and who our judges is and who our police chief is and who our mayors are. Those are the ones that really affect your day-to-day life more than anybody else. And nobody, you know, your port commissioners and your power commissioners and your judges, nobody even know their names locally.
But I got a question.
And,
what about that crazy
so
man whose name is Mitch McConnell?
Mitch McConnell?
Can we do something about him? Yes, because he's going to put a stopper
and we get the
on
people
it.
In Kentucky to vote for somebody else, yeah, but he's in Kentucky. Yeah, but he's from Kentucky. Yeah, we can do something about him. We already done something about him. He was the majority leader. Now he's the minority leader. We got to make sure that he
can he be no leader?
We got to make it. That's what we're working on. That's what we're working on. But
I'm just
time,
saying.
He was the majority leader. Now he's the minority leader. So he don't get
when
it comes to the floor anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say
Roscoe
that is
Mitch.
Because, you know, he always puts the stopper on everything. He always puts his foot down and it's like, you know, what did Mitch say? Like, you know, E.F. Hutton. It's like, cuss words, no.
Okay.
Y'all need to just, you know, put him aside and just,
okay.
you know, rule him over. Do something.
We got to get rid of the filibuster. I know
about
we're working right now, but well, we did
listen
about him. He's the majority leader. We got to maintain that we ain't gonna be able. We probably not gonna be able to get him voted out of Kentucky, but we can make sure that he get out of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then
okay.
He's not
you
know, he don't get to decide the everyday goings on in the Senate anymore. He has to do what somebody
mm-hmm.
else tells him to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's not even the second
right.
in command, so he's the minority leader. So not the man. He used to be the majority leader. So he did a lot of wrong.
I understand.
But
mm-hmm.
he ain't doing it by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But before we go to the
show,
we do have another caller who has joined us. The last four is 9687. Would you please let us know who you are and where you're calling from, please?
Hey, good afternoon, my people. This is Anthony Peterson with OIC of Washington here in Yakima County.
Hello, Anthony Peterson.
How are you all doing?
Chief of Smoke, how you doing, Anthony?
Hey, man, I'm blessed, man. I'm just blessed to be alive, blessed to be here.
I can't wait to play them tournaments and stuff, boy. I'm telling you, you guys are at three more tournaments on the docket. This is golf, guys, so I'm sorry I had to steer off course, but we just can't.
No, we're supposed to stay on course. Mm-mm.
Hey.
I'm messing with you.
Yeah, but Anthony is the deputy director for OIC of Washington and stuff, and he's not an up-and-comer. He's already here, y'all. I'm telling you, man. He got mad skills. So welcome, Anthony. Really welcome. We're honored to have you, man. So just jump
in.
Yes,
to be here.
You know, and, you know, you can, I know you're a busy dude, man. This like this guy right here, he's probably stirring about $20, $30 million large and stuff, you know, of a big organization, man. Wow, man. I wouldn't even know what to do with none of that.
I just want to echo some of the comments that were made about getting our local, you know, legislators and policymakers, you know, on board with some of the initiatives that we have going.
Mm-hmm.
That's hugely important, and that's what we have. You know, I know Mr. Parks asked me to speak a little bit about what we're doing here on the local level. You know, and
mm-hmm.
if I may, we just had a meeting with our county commissioners. Just to clarify some comments that were made in regards to the term segregation as they are using it in a misinformed way, and we have to educate them on a local level the history of the word segregation and how it really was shameful and the way they tried to use it in connection to a vaccine. And and that word historically has been used to oppress, in the light of oppression based on race and solely race rather than an option to get a vaccine or not. So, you know, we had a conversation with our commissioners, representatives from the NAACP, local, black thought leaders, which also turned into an opportunity to talk about the discrimination based on our cities, parks, and recs opportunities, as far as where our pools are located, our dollars for youth programming, dollars for senior programming, and the, then the discrepancies in funding. So, you know, it we are engaged with our local commissioners as well as our city council as well. Being as it that we oversee the Henry Beauchamp Community Center, so we try to keep a keen pulse on what they have going on, and making sure that our voice is heard on a local level and they understand that they're on notice at all times. So I just want to echo that it's important, not just, our legislators or senators and House of Representatives, but taking it one step closer to make sure we're engaged in with our county commissioners, our city officials as well, because they have a large impact as a gentleman, I forgot, I didn't hear his name, said they have more of an impact on our daily life than, a presidential race. So.
Oh, Raymond Miller.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yo, Raymond, Mr. Miller. Sorry, I didn't catch it when I joined on. So I just wanted to let you all know what we're doing here in Yakima. And then we're doing a series of block parties, just to engage our folks and getting them out of the house, getting them engaged and back into the community, getting just having social experiences. And then we're going to add things to those block parties. We're having our elections coming up, our local elections coming up. So we're going to start having forums at those block parties for candidates to speak and so on. But, there's nothing like bringing people out, having food, bouncy houses, and all those things, but then also having the purpose behind, getting them out and tying, political engagement, tying economic development, and tying in other generational poverty breaking initiatives into what we're doing as far as our block party and social activity. So. We got a lot of stuff going on. We got our National Night Out coming up August 3rd, and we have a partnership with our local police to really keep them, engaged in the community, not hovering and enforcing, things on the community. So that's coming up August 3rd, and we just got a lot of good things coming up other than, several golf tournaments, Mr. Parks.
Thank you, Anthony, for your leadership in this. Now, this guy is talking and stuff. He tried to work behind the scenes, but he is very much involved in everything that's taking place and stuff. And I can see we're turning the corner because he's not scared to engage in the group that he's got, not only NAACP, Native American, Hispanic, Pacific Islanders. I mean, this coalition is by far one of the best coalitions I've seen since I've been in this valley. So that's what this brother is bringing to the table. So, hey, Anthony, you can hang on as long as you like, man. We're looking for your comments and stuff.
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah, I'm here. Thank you, Mr. Parks. Yeah.
And you're located in Yakima, Anthony, or in the Seattle area?
In Yakima. Yeah. Yes. Yep, the same area Mr. Parks is.
And the reason why I'm asking is because I'm putting this in our chat room so it can be kind of like what do you want to call it, notes, so when people read the notes or read the chat, they can say, okay, Yakima, Washington, NAACP, block parties, and I have August 3rd, you know, and other things, contact Anthony Peterson in Yakima. So that's what I got.
Excellent, yep. Oh, no worries.
Is that fine?
Yes, ma'am.
Cool. So I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to get the word out, you know, slowly but surely, but yet while we're on the call, you know, keep people involved as well who are our listening audience and our worldwide audience as well. So thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So you want me to go ahead and play that first clip, Sergeant Parks?
Yeah, let's play the first. Why don't you play the first two clips, and then we'll come back on the other side and then have some discussion. There's three clips, but we might not need to do one of the clips, yeah, because we're talking about reparations, so he goes through it in different terms. So let's hear what
Bob Johnson has
to say.
Gotcha. Here we go. The first is on reparations and police reform. And the second one is on the $14 trillion of reparations for slavery, ADOS, a reparation.
He made history as America's first black billionaire when he sold BET to our parent company, Viacom, in 2001.
Yeah, now Robert Johnson is on the forefront fighting for racial equality and justice, and we are so lucky to be joined by the legend and an American treasure himself, Robert Johnson. Good to see you and good morning to you.
Morning.
Good morning to you guys, too. Great to hear from you guys.
Are you unveiled a $14.7 trillion reparations plan? Can you tell us about it, and what are reparations for our viewers who may not know?
Well, reparations is simply a nation making a commitment to atone for past sin to a population that has been essentially denied equality of opportunity as other citizens. And in the case of African Americans, some 40 million descendants of slaves, it is reparations for slavery, Jim Crow segregation, and racial inequality that has deprived African Americans of access to equal wealth and equal opportunity.
And can you tell us your thoughts about the calls to defund police, and what would you suggest?
I think the call to defund police is the wrong proposal to a difficult problem. The police as a whole do what they are assigned to do, which is protect and serve. Are there bad apples in the police force? Absolutely, just there are bad apples in about every other enterprise in this society and around the world. But the focus should be on how to get the best talent, train the best talent, keep the best talent, and pay the best talent, rather than defunding police budget, insist upon quality talent, quality performance, and to pay the police. I mean, a policeman is much like a doctor in this sense. A doctor, a bad doctor can decide life or death. A bad policeman can decide life or death. But we pay our doctors because we want the best. Why not pay the police who have that same ability in certain circumstances? Pay police the best. And this idea of reimagining police, I don't think it has a real a possibility, because what happens when you send a community police officer with no gun to a situation where, having nothing to do with the police, but having to do with the problem in a home or a problem in a situation that caused that person's life to be threatened or even worse. And then what do you say? Well, he couldn't defend himself, or we should have sent a policeman. That's a problem. You can't solve a problem by just saying we're going to do away with police and have people who are not police dealing with problems that can get out of hand, and that's why we need police.
And Mr. Johnson, it's no secret that the African-American community has been dealing with police brutality for quite some time, during the 60s and, of course, in the 70s when Marvin Gaye wrote a song about it. And you look to where we are now. Are you surprised at the reaction behind the George Floyd death there in Minneapolis across the world now? It seems like we are moving in a direction of change, or at least more people are calling for it.
I'm not surprised at the reaction. to the George Floyd death and around the world. Of course, as you know, the world is now global. It's no longer, you know, pockets of populations here and there. Things are instantaneously transmitted across the world. So I see that as a result of globalism. And I also see it as people's concern about what's happening to people who have been treated unequal. And that's throughout the society, whether it's France, Germany, or any place else. The issue, though, on this is, how do we solve a problem that is in the black community as well as a problem of bad policing? And so we should not just focus on one issue. I think as black Americans, we need to focus on the totality of issues affecting our communities.
And Robert, last question before you go. What is the best way people can push for change?
Well, we're in a free enterprise capitalistic system that believes in democracy and the vote. And I think the best way you put reach for change is to get involved in the political system. That's why I've called that Black Lives Matter ought to form its own political party, develop candidates, run candidates, and focus on things that are in the permanent interests of African Americans and not be an appendage of one party or ignored by the other party. I believe that the ballot is the best way to change society as long as we're going to be a free market democracy.
Mr. Johnson, just want to say thank you for coming on to the show, and just want to personally thank you for just being an example and your contributions to not only American television but world television when it comes to starting BET. It was the first time that I had even learned that an African-American could even own a television network. So you did it, and we appreciate it, and we thank you for that.
ADO West family, I'm going to play brief audio of Bob Johnson's call for reparations. Now, it was shocking because a lot of his previous business dealings and business behavior was very shady, and I don't co-sign any of that shit. But reparations is the only solution for ADO West. And if you don't believe that the new black media has influenced this, that we're powerful and effective, you're wrong. We're influencing American politics. We're influencing the political discourse. We're influencing not only politicians, but business leaders to talk about reparations in the American political system. So I'm going to go ahead and cue this up, and I'll be back with brief commentary.
Answers to long, horrific questions about the stain of slavery are not going to solve the inequality problem. We need to focus on wealth creation and wealth generation, and to do that, we must bring the descendants of slaves into equality with this nation. And that's what I propose in this $14 trillion proposal, to provide reparations, not only for the sin or the atonement of the sin of slavery and Jim Crowism and desegregation, both de facto and de jure, but to cause America to live up to the concept and the notion that this nation was born on the idea of American exceptionalism. And if we take that big leap, I am convinced that the problems that we confront today can be solved, but it takes a big, bold action, and $14 trillion in reparations for damages visited upon the heirs of slaves is an appropriate statement.
Bob Howard, and this is, we've spoken many times, I don't think you've ever embraced such a radical idea, and this is new for you, and I've seen it put forward before, and not taken to all the way to mainstream thinking, and I think that you're embracing it is probably going to get a lot of people talking about this. Where would the $14 trillion come from? I mean, lately, we've been thinking we could do $3 trillion here, $3 trillion there. This would be through some type of wealth transfer from the haves to people that have the money, the wealthy individuals. Where would that $14 trillion come from?
Well, let me just say, on the contrary, I put out this statement on my website since 2019 about the need for this reparation. So I'm not new to this challenge. But to the point you're making is that wealth transfer is exactly what's needed. Think about this. For 200 plus years or so of slavery, labor taken with no compensation is a wealth transfer. Denial of access to education, which is a primary driver to accumulation of income and wealth, is a wealth transfer. The housing program that we all in America believe in, that your house is your home is your castle, and therefore the government has historically subsidized mortgage lending by allowing you to deduct it from the tax. But think of this. African Americans with no accumulation of wealth cannot afford to meet the down payments of home ownership, and therefore they live in apartments and where there is no deductibility for the interest they pay on their lease or for the income they pay on their lease. That's why today African Americans are about 40% of home ownership. White Americans are 70+% of home ownership. When you put all of these factors together, lack of access to education, lack of access to home ownership, the primary source of wealth for most middle income Americans, and discrimination, you have had for the past 200 years, in effect, a wealth transfer from white Americans away from African Americans.
Idiot family, Bob Johnson articulated that extremely well. And his number of $14 trillion is a good starting point of negotiation. We're owed more than that, I believe. And notice how the cracker that was interviewing him said that it's a radical idea, like, sort of like Bernie Sanders calling reparations divisive. You know, even though he supported reparations for the fake Jews, he called it divisive. So you notice how they call it names instead of anything but justice. Because this white American devil does not want ADOS, black Americans, to be economically equal with them. They don't mind social equality and we don't even get that, but they don't mind social integration. You going to church with them, you going to school with them, etc. But they don't want black people to be on equal footing with them. That's what this is all about. It's about white privilege. It's about unearned, unmerited wealth and oppression. That's what this country was built on. And see, Bob Johnson, I'm suspicious of his motives, is on the right track with this. And I'm glad that he presented this. And we need more black people. We need black celebrities on board to push this through, because reparations is the only solution to ADOS. And what this white devil doesn't realize is if you pay reparations, it will boost the American economy. It will increase American gross domestic product, or GDP. It will make the country richer and better when the country is equal. But these white devils are so racist that they won't acknowledge the fact that they owe us. So our simple message is this: cut the damn check. And we're going to get reparations whether you like it or not. We're going to get it. And that's plain and goddamn simple. But let me know what you think.
It's plain and simple, he said. Show me the money. Go ahead. Brother Parks, I'm sorry.
Well, hey, I can't disagree with anything that was said, period, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 3 points that I want to make and stuff is that we already talked about this before we even rolled that clip. okay.
Right.
Brother Miller and Brother Peterson, they already shot it.
Mm-hmm.
They come from two different, totally places on this planet. Okay, at the same time, they said what? Number one, we got to increase our political clout. Okay, that's what they, that's the first thing they said. I heard that even though I'm deaf. And then number two, focus on creating wealth. Okay, we got 40.7 million African Americans. If we even do the equation, about the $14 trillion, and I can't count, y'all, but it sounds like to me, for 40.7 million, that's 303,000, over 303,000 per African American, which is still not, is still not where it's supposed to be, you know. And then we're not going to just go and put all of that money in the bank. Of course we would, but what do you think about 40 million people putting $300 and some thousand a piece? Okay, do you think that's going to stimulate the economy? I mean, just somebody tell me, you know. If we get that money, we're all going to bank that money. We're going to get cars.
I can see the brothers out there.
I can see the brothers getting them pimp mobiles and stuff again. You know? So I think that's going to stimulate the economy and stuff. So, yeah, I am so ready for this conversation, y'all.
I can
Okay, James, let me tell you, one of the things we have to do, we just can't give the money out, in my opinion. We got to educate the folks before we give the money out, because we want the people to have the not. One of the things we do, I'm a veteran. One of the things to do when I work with veterans, and one of the things we help veterans do is get their service-connected disabilities. And a lot of the times, veterans get what is known as, when I call it back pay. Veterans, they file for their claim, and it may be 4 or 5 years before their claim get adjudicated, Department of Veterans Affairs. And so they have a lump sum payment coming to them that could be hundreds of thousands of dollars. I haven't seen guys get – I had one guy I worked with, he had over 51 years of back pay that the government owed him. He was a World War II veteran, and they had to pay him over $500,000 in back pay. That he got one lump sum, and I had guys that get lots of lump sums with, you know, $100,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, and you get it, they get it on that month, and 2 months later they broke because they didn't spend it all. So we got to educate the folks to realize that the money needs to be, you know, you can do what you want when you get some money, but education is a good thing about how to invest your money, how to get out and how to purchase a house and make sure that, you know, you don't have to buy a new car, but you can get a good car, a good used car.
And that
car.
Generational
you don't have to go out
wealth
and
pay cash
as well. For a new car when you get a good used car. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But we got to get the money out.
So you're saying, what you're saying, Brother Miller, is that we got to keep that money as much as we can in the black community so it can make more money. I think that's one of the
problems
right now. We're going to spend Kmart and Walmart now instead of trying to find out how we can invest in ourselves.
Right.
You know.
Right.
We
right.
don't invest in
we
your
all
black
do better
banks
when we
and
all
stuff.
Do better.
Yeah.
We all do better when we all do better.
That's what I'm talking
about.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll figure out a
that's
way.
Right.
You know, don't,
that's
don't
so right.
Go out and paint the town red or whatever you want to call it, and then spend your money, and then next year you broke. So you got to figure out a way to keep that money. Buy you a house, get you a good car, put the money in the bank, take a vacation. Nothing wrong with that if you haven't had one in a while or you need one. But also, you know, make sure that you got some more money. You know, a house is a good investment. My house is I bought the house I live in now. I bought it 5 years ago. It has doubled in price in the last 5 years. I can
Amen.
Sell it now and pay off my mortgage and have half the money I paid for it. So in the last 5 years, the house I live in now today has doubled and probably going to be probably two-thirds of it. It's going to probably be over almost $1 million now, what it's worth and what I paid for it. Mm-hmm. And you know, so that means that I got, you know, I might be cash poor, but I'm house rich. And so that's how you build wealth.
I got a question. So these reparations that we're, quote unquote, going to get, okay, Mr. Johnson said $14 trillion. So all those people who have died before us, who gets their money? All I hear is chirping. I don't hear nobody saying
that. The money goes to the descendants. Is it going to be like,
okay.
And I'm in favor for a lot of folks who are here today. I'm going to the people who are descendants of slaves, not just, and some people might get mad at me when I say this, not just black people, but some people uh-huh. weren't here in 1863. Some people's families weren't here in 1863. Most of the white citizens in the country, they weren't here in 1863. Donald Trump probably wasn't here in 1863. He's a second generation.
He's not here now, but anyway.
But yeah, but you know what I mean? So a lot of these folks talking about making America great again wasn't here during in 18. They definitely weren't here in 1619. But descendants of slaves, if you can prove that you were a descendant of a slave, then that's what you get the money. That's my opinion, but they're going to work that out when they put the commission together to figure out how you do that and how our legislators are going to do that and figure it out. Of course, we got the Urban League, the NAACP, and all the other groups that have been working on this for years and years. So we got to figure that all out, but we got to make sure that you just don't give it back to the man. When you get the money, just don't give it back to the man.
Yeah.
And then when you have to be broke, the man got to get the money, and then the so-called man.
We won't have it again.
Right.
And then what about the people who were on the Black Wall Street? Will they get their, you know, because they made money and had money and all that kind of stuff. Will they get reparations as well?
People on Black Wall Street, they were descendants of slaves. That's how they got there. So, yeah, those folks, they are descendants of slaves. They're direct descendants. So those people will be getting something. We can't give people who aren't here anymore, but we can give their descendants.
They have something working on that. Oklahoma do.
Donald Trump didn't build a business. He inherited all his money from his father. So, you know, he inherited his money. So we ain't going to inherit our ancestors. The debt is owed to our ancestors, the one that they enslaved and sold and did whatever thing. I know I'm a direct. I can trace mine. I know where we at. Where we were at with slaves. I know when we got to North Carolina on the ship. So we can trace that
So. So say you have a grandfather and a grandmother who were descendants and you have a children, quote unquote. So some of us saying a certain amount should go to each descendant. But if there was a grandmother and grandfather, shouldn't they get like double that? Like the 600 and whatever? I'm just wondering, you know, how do they know how to divide the money up per descendant or per person?
They're going to figure out how many African Americans in the United States today. And I said that 14 trillion is not enough. It's more like 100 billion, but 100 trillion, whatever that is, whatever thing is not enough money, but the United States got enough money to cover it. I can guarantee you that. They made a lot of money off of it.
Right.
And with the initial payment. And I'm calling 14 trillion the initial payment, but that's going to be to the descendants. My grandmother, my great grandfather. I just found out I was doing ancestry.com, and I just found out one of my ancestors today who was born in 1820, in Virginia. And so, so yeah, when we know he was a slave in 1820, And so we got to figure that's something we got to figure out, how to get the money in people's hands. And also we got to have a good educational program on before the people get the money. We got to have an educational, because we don't want them to be broke. We get the money to them in 2022, 2023. We don't want them to be broke in 2025. So we want them to have something. Start a business or invest in a business. How to invest your money, things of that nature. We need to, a lot of the earlier athletes, they got a lot of money and even Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he had $20 million during his basketball career. He was able to get some of it back, but he wasn't able to get it all back. So we got to be smart about who we invest with, who we let touch our money, and how we spend it, so we won't be having to go back and strive. Now, everybody's not going to go that way out, but we got to make sure that the majority of people hang on that many money and put it into businesses in your community to build up your community. That's, every dollar that comes into every $5 that comes into the African-American community today, four of it leaves out of this community and never comes back. We get to keep $1. So it's because it's flowing out. But, in other communities, I don't know where that is. Somebody told me the other day, I don't know where, in the Korean community, that money flows over and over again at least 5 or 6 times within the Korean community before it goes somewhere else. So in the African-American community, it flows over once. You get it. You give it to somebody in the African community, and it goes out the door to another community. That doesn't help us build our community. Even in lots of African-American communities, you know what I'm saying? And I ain't got nothing against Koreans or anybody else, but they put their shops in the African-American communities, and when you spend that money in those Korean shops, it goes out to the Korean communities and doesn't stay in your community.
That's right.
So we need to have African-American. We're going to have African-American communities. A majority of people living in them, we should make the majority of the businesses should be run by African Americans.
Right.
And that's how
we
keep our money in, and when your suppliers should be African Americans as well.
I agree.
You're going to do it. That's how you keep it. That's how you accumulate wealth. And so keep turning that money over within your community. You give a dollar, pass it on.
No,
everybody
he's not.
Have to use that.
Oh, he dropped off already.
Mhm. Mhm.
Okay. All right. I guess we can we can go to this music now. Let's listen to John Legend, and that next clip after him is real interesting, man. I can't wait to discuss that one.
Yes. Okay. We won't spoil your party, but we're gonna play Wake Up Everybody from John Legend and the Roots, and featuring Melanie, Fiona, and Common. Wake up, y'all.
Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, y'all. This is Black Torture Boss DJ from around the way, and you're listening to WAKE Radio, spreading tunes across your room. From Marvin Gaye to Hathaway, from Nina Simone to Pendergrass, we pay tribute to the legends of the past and introduce the legends of the future. Special big up to my man Johnny Stevens, who shares his passion with us every day. Wake up, New York.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There is so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, yeah.
No, no.
3496. You want to tell us who you are and where you're calling from, please?
Hey, this is Sample calling from Myrtle Beach area. And I was just calling. I am just my own little personality here. I will be doing some DJing and things of that nature in the near future. And my whole person just, you know, we're doing some things here with some people here with Sinez and more people, you know, just trying to, you know, uplift each other and what we're all trying to do.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you. They've been joining us the last few nights, and so it's good to have them on the line. So I appreciate you calling in, Ms. Sinful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Brother Parks, what you want me to do? Play that clip?
I know that you guys have heard lately and stuff that there's this black militia group that's been in the news, I guess, up in Massachusetts. What happened was they had this armed standoff with the police. I don't know whether you guys know about it, but I think they're trying to send a message. So let's play that clip and then let's have some discussion on the other side.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
You may not have heard of the Moorish Nationals, but police have members claim to follow Moorish science. It comes from a black religious group that's been around for nearly a century. Mm-hmm. Most of its members obey the law, but not everyone. Chip Reed looks at how some use their religion to justify the crime.
This 35,000-square-foot mansion in an exclusive corner of Bethesda, Maryland, has 12 bedrooms, 17 bathrooms, and trees planted by President Clinton and Vice President Gore. on the market for nearly $6 million, it's not exactly a steal. So imagine real estate agent Jordan Feinberg's surprise when he learned someone had moved into the vacant property.
The owner calls me again and says, the neighbor called, there are people inside the house claiming they own the house. And I'm like, what?
Lamont Butler, a.k.a. Lamont Maurice L., claimed the mansion for himself. He even provided documents issued by the so-called Moorish National Republic to back it up.
It's a burglary, in the purest sense.
Across the country, Butler and many other self-styled Moorish nationals have laid claim to property and status they say is lawfully theirs because their ancestors were here first. In Memphis, Tennessee, Tabitha Gentry staked a claim on this $3 million foreclosed home using heavy chains. Charged with trespassing, burglary, and theft, Gentry, who prefers the name Abka Ray Bey, says as a citizen of the Moorish American National Republic, that land is her land. And this man was arrested by police in Fayetteville, North Carolina, for interfering with a stolen car investigation. But his wife claims the arrest was illegal because he is a member of the Moorish Nation. Moors traced their beliefs to Noble Drew Ali, who founded the Moorish Science Temple in Chicago in 1925. With tens of thousands of followers, the faith borrows heavily from Islam. It also teaches that all black Americans are Moorish Americans, descendants of an ancient Moroccan global empire, an idea some followers have taken one step further.
So you don't have to get a license plate or a driver's license. You can lay claim to property.
Spencer Dew, who studies the movement, says Moorish Americans have long taken pride in being American citizens. But as the group splintered over the decades, some offshoots abandoned that view.
But I also think we have some opportunistic individuals, some sort of lone wolf elements.
Jeff Fort is perhaps the most notorious movement member. The former leader of a violent Chicago street gang, he was convicted in 1987 of conspiring with Libya's Gaddafi regime to blow up U.S. government buildings.
It's kind of a public relations nightmare. The vast majority of Moorish communities in America are not involved in any of this sovereign citizen ideology, not involved in fraudulent behavior, not involved in criminal acts.
As for Butler, he eventually abandoned the Bethesda mansion, but he still faces charges of burglary, theft, and fraud. He's currently out on bond.
You know, everybody likes to look at a big, beautiful house, but usually you call a realtor to unlock the door for you.
For CBS This Morning, Chip Reed, Washington.
Wow, yeah, so, that's really interesting.
Yeah, but before we start, Inez, Raymond is only going to be able to be with us until another.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Raymond is only going to be able
Go
to
ahead.
Be with us for a couple more minutes, so he has a special message and stuff that he wants to bring, and that is what they're doing in their community and stuff to try and bridge the gap, so to speak. So, Raymond, when you get ready,
and he's
stuff,
with
you can.
Mm-hmm. And for the people who are just joined in, Raymond Miller is with OIC. Out of Washington State.
No,
He's not with OIC.
He's the chairman of the Armed Service and Veterans Affairs for the AOC conference, NAACP State Conference, and many other
last
things.
Okay.
He's on the Governor's Veterans Affairs deal. This brother is really heavy. So, Raymond, when you want to bring that message, you can bring that message, and we can talk about that clip at the same time.
Okay. Well, that was a good clip, and I liked what they were talking about it. But just to give somebody a background, I'm the chairman of the Armed Services and Veterans Affairs Committee for the Alaska, Oregon, and Washington State Area Conference of the NAACP. I'm one of the founding members and former national director of the National Association for Black Veterans Incorporated, NAVVET. I'm the president, founder, and CEO of Best Place Northwest Welcome Home, where we work with military veterans and their families, helping them make that readjustment from military life back to civilian life. And some people make it very, it can be very difficult for some people to make that readjustment. And I'm a clinical, I'm a psychologist, clinical therapist, used to work with the Department of Veterans Affairs at the VA Hospital in Seattle, Washington, in the PTSD clinic. So I have a lot of experience, and I'm a veteran service officer, where I've helped veterans and their families get over more than $2 billion in benefits and services from through the Department of Veterans Affairs through their military service and healthcare. One of the things I really want to talk about, and one of the things that one of the really pressing things that going on in this country right now is that, and we got to take it down to the local level, is the voter suppression that is going on in the United States, and it is really, and we compared, and I've been studying the before this all this for the last few years, I've been studying the Reconstruction between 1868 and. Particularly 1902, and where in 1868, African-American men voted at a 90% level. 90% of African-Americans who were eligible to vote voted. 1868 is also the year that the Ku Klux Klan got started. And slowly, when you see that through Jim Crow laws and intimidation and hangings and things that they and the criminal justice system relating to the 13th Amendment was passed and ratified in December of 1865, where the only thing that you can really discriminate against someone is that if they got a criminal record, and you see that African Americans at the top of the criminal justice system. So locally, we need to make sure that we are registered to vote, and that we make sure that we exercise that right to vote. Things that we are working on, and also we got to get people out of the criminal justice system. Decriminalizing things and making sure that we aren't the one that only one in the criminal justice system disproportionately everything that we're working on. We're working in so many things here in the Pacific Northwest with the NAACP, and I'm also was the former vice president of Snohomish County, Washington Human Rights Commission, and so we're trying to make sure that everybody understands. But the number one thing we do, we need to make sure that. One thing that I do is that I try to register one new voter every month. And one new month. That's only 12 new voters a year. But I also ask the people who I register to vote to go out and do the same thing. And so we can multiply that. So, and it's not so hard to get find a new someone that's just turning 18 or family members, next door neighbors, people you meet in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. I talked to them about registering to vote. So I tried to register one person every month. Of course, I didn't do it in 2020 because of the pandemic, but we're trying to make sure that we get as many people registered to vote and make sure that they vote. You can really and make sure that they vote and make sure that people, that person, and I know every one of them won't do it, but some of them will. I know some people do it. I didn't register hundreds, maybe thousands of people to vote. Over the years, through church, community organizations. So there's a reason why they don't want us to vote, though, and that's because it's power. It's power to get access to power, and they can decide they are chopping up Bernie Sanders, and the head of the Senate Budget Committee, is chopping up. He's talking about $6 trillion. He's running around figuring out how to spend $6 trillion right now today. They're going to spend it. They're going to spend that $6 trillion, and that's just a blink in the bucket. So we got to make sure that we're in those committee rooms, that we are in those hearings when they have a thing. So locally, we're making sure that our local government officials are looking at the community and making sure that they're not the only one that we are part of, because when they're making a decision about how they're going to spend our tax dollars, that we are at the table giving them direction, having input, and making sure that it flows back to our community. So that's what we got to do at the local level. As we said earlier, your local wastewater port of commissioner or your your power commissioner or who's controlling your power, your water, electricity, your judges, your local judges, saying who's going to give out all these sentences to people, and they're giving out sentences in a fair manner. We got to make sure that they are, that we know who they are and that they know who we are and that we are part of the equation. Once we do that, we can be successful. That's what we're doing in our community. And number one is voting, getting people ready to vote and knowing the issues that you need to vote on. And so we're going to start having community forums. We've been doing things on Zoom for the last year, which is kind of hard to do. But with the NAACP, we're getting out more now that a lot of us have been vaccinated, and we're releasing some of the restrictions on meeting sizes and things we can do in the local community. So we're trying to do that, but we're still talking to local officials daily. I have a conversation with somebody or my elected official or my national or my senators or my congressman. Make sure that, you know, if I call them up, they know who I am. They know my name. And so that's what you got to do. And they know what we stand for. And they write me and call me. And so that what you got to do, the same thing. We got to get everybody to do it. Get them and tell them what. And one of the things I learned is that if you go to them, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So if your car wheel is squeaking, that's the one you give the grease to. So when we show up and we ask them for something, we usually get it.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that we've been asking for, if I go down to our capital, our state capital is Olympia, Washington, when I go down to I'm at 4 or 5 hearings every year on certain different issues. Lately it's been on gun control legislation, and we got the most progressive gun control legislation in Washington State. In 2019, I testified to 7 different bills for gun control legislation in Washington State. We passed 7 control bills in Washington State in 2019. So 2020 was a little slower. But when you show up, they respond to who shows up. But a lot of time I walk in a lot of these hearing rooms, and I'm the only person, and African-American participation goes up 100%. We got to make sure that we are in those rooms telling them what we want. So that's how we got to make sure that we're doing it. So I'm encouraging everybody.
Getting that
make
voice
sure you
heard.
Get your driver's license, your ID cards, because they're coming at our voting. They're coming at our voting just that they came in 1868. They came after the voting of black people in 1868, and they put it in the bottom of the barrel. Now we got about 30% voting rights. 30% of us are voting when it used to be 90%. We got to make sure that voting is the number one thing, and they know it. The Republican Party, I hate to say it, I'm not going to talk about partisan politics, but the Republican Party has decided that they can't win at the national level with black people voting, with the agenda that they're putting out there. If they change their agenda, we would vote for them. I don't care who I vote for as long as they put out an agenda that's going to work for me. So I'm a Democrat. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I'm an issue guy. So if you're going to work on my issues, the things that are going to make me and my community better and safer and more affluent, those are the people that I'm going to vote for. But we got to make sure you vote. And people thinking that your vote don't count. And that's the trick they play on us. They tell us that their vote don't count. But they ain't not voting. They're still voting, but they don't want you to vote. So.
Right, exactly.
That's my little spiel for today.
Okay. Thank you for your spiel for today.
Thank you,
Raymond.
I do have to go, thank you guys for it, and thank you for all you do, and I'm happy to be here, and hopefully I'll be talking to y'all again
anytime.
Soon. Right.
Yes, anytime. You're welcome. Anytime. Thank you. Have a good one. Thank you. Be safe.
All right. Bye. Be safe. Thank you.
Okay. So we want to go back to the Moorish clip, Mr. Parks.
Yeah, well.
Mr. Parks? Oh.
Yeah, what do you guys think about that? It sounds like to me that
these brothers are trying to make a statement, but I think that they probably mm-hmm. are trying to be in it for themselves at the same time. What are your thoughts on that clip?
We've had a couple more people join us, so I don't know if they heard the clip or not. Let me see here.
Hello.
Hello? Oh. Caller ending in 6050. Yes. I'm not sure if you heard the clip or not on the Moorish Nationals.
I didn't hear all of the clip on the Moorish Nationals. I kind of just called in to listen, but I kind of know. Mm-hmm. Was this about the gentleman that got that had to run in with the police?
Yes. Is this what, Joe or Patrick?
Patrick.
Patrick. Hey, Patrick, how are you?
I'm doing fine. And yourself?
Fine. Thank you. Thank you. This gentleman, he calls in every so often, and we have wonderful conversations. And so if he has something to say, he'll say he's got good words to say. So I don't know if he wanted to say anything on the Moorish National.
No, I didn't. Unfortunately, I didn't hear the clip, but I think I just found it interesting that when the gentlemen were approached by the police, it was interesting mm-hmm. how the media depicted this. So it's mm-hmm. interesting how the media depicted okay. it as a police standoff when one of the guys or a couple of the guys were going live when it was happening, and they were like, this is not a standoff. They told us we couldn't leave, so we're here, right? So it's not a standoff. Like, there's no standoff. And they tried to say that, they were pointing guns. They're like, we're all trained. We know to have our weapons pointed down. We weren't pointing our weapons
right,
at anybody.
Right.
We weren't pointing at the police.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find that interesting. Here's the interesting thing, though. Now, there are other groups out here who claim to be some kind of paramilitary group. And they go online. And they spew, we're going to do mm-hmm. this, we're going to do that. I mean, they talk big though. And then they go out here in public, and you notice the police don't touch them at all.
Funny
you notice
how that
the
happens.
Police don't say anything to them at all.
Amen. Amen. And they carry their guns out in public.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but police don't say anything to them at all. These brothers had their weapons, and they were going to a training facility. But for some reason, these guys scared the hell out of the police. You see what I mean? So
they weren't ready for
it. Why were the police so? Well, here's the thing. Why were the police so scared? Mm-hmm. And these brothers that very quietly are doing their thing, but the ones that go mm-hmm. rah 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 out here. They don't seem to be concerned. They don't mess with them, but they don't seem to be concerned with them at all. And I think we have to look at that and say, okay,
look at what happened on January 6th. That speaks the whole picture. You know, these guys took the Capitol because they say it belonged to them, okay? And they were the 1 in 99% of America and stuff, you know.
Well,
you're right.
Well,
it sounds like a privilege matter to me. It sounds privileged. Privilege.
Here's the thing. There's always been talk about these guys that are coming out with these so-called paramilitary groups that seem to be able to get as much media attention as they like. There's a new group,
mm-hmm.
Black Guns Matter, mm-hmm. and that guy's on Fox News all the time. Well, he's a darling of the media. What paramilitary group or what military group do you know is prancing around on TV talking about we're going to do this and we're going to do that? are you serious? Like, so we have to be careful of some of these groups that seem to come out of nowhere and get instant media attention and drawing our people into their activities. Because
mm-hmm.
they could be sent. That whole thing could be a setup. Right? Like,
right.
You know,
absolutely.
Because they,
mm-hmm.
you see what I mean?
Absolutely.
Those brothers, the rise of the Moors, They're not being invited on any TV shows. And they're being vilified right off the bat. Right? All these guys are standoff with police, and they're anti-government, and they're this and that. And all, I mean, hysteria.
It's a black man with a gun. It's a black man with a gun. You know, you got them. They're gonna want the National Guard to go hunt them down.
Right. But it's not just black men with a gun. It's, it may be that the ones that are not controlled, because this is like the other NFAC and all these other people, they don't seem to mind them having guns.
Right.
Even though the leader of NFAC was at a Trump rally, clapping at a Trump rally, but, you know, now he's trying to make excuses why he was there and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, you know, we just have to be very, very careful. We have to be very careful when you see these people that are able to get instant media attention on TV, you know, and online, just going off, sounding like an old 70s. Mm-hmm. We're going to get those suckers, and we're going to do it. Like, look, who talks like that anymore? Like, what is this guy talking about? This NFA. We're going to get those suckers, and we're going to do this and that. I mean, really, it sounds ridiculous. So I think we have to be careful. I think we have to be careful about who we follow. Everybody's looking for something. Everybody's looking
right.
for something.
We
just have to be careful. That's all. That's my thing. So as far as those guys are concerned, I think they let everybody go. I think two guys got arrested for something. I don't even know what it is. So we got to see how that whole thing plays out. I'm very interested to see how it does play out, because legally they didn't do anything wrong. They didn't do anything wrong.
Well, we always get called out. Always get called out.
They didn't resist. Mm-mm. They didn't point any guns at anybody. They didn't do anything wrong. They followed the law as they're written. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, we're going to have to Sergeant Park. Rest of what's going on with that. And I'll probably have it on my next show to have a conclusion. You're welcome to come back and comment on it. Anything else you want to comment on? Thank you.
I love me some Joe.
No problem. Thanks. A lot of interesting stuff Patrick. Going on in the world today. That's for sure.
Yes, it is. So basically, Sergeant Park, she wanted to talk about why these people took over these houses because they thought that they belonged to them. Is that what you wanted us to talk about?
Well, I'm just getting, I don't even have the full research on it, just like Joe just said, you know. I'm just trying to figure out.
That's Patrick.
You know,
Patrick.
I'm sorry, Patrick, but yeah, I'm sort of like him. What is this all about, man? You got to analyze this stuff, and I agree with him. You got to be careful with who you lay down with, because if you lay down with some dogs, you're going to get fleas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I know. So, you know, just trying to get educated on who these people are and what they're doing. And I guess they're trying to make some kind of statement, but we'll probably know soon enough what that statement is. And like you said, You see hundreds of thousands of these privileged people getting guns, and they got kids, you know, wearing automatic weapons and out in the street, and then, you know, approaching different capitals and stuff, and nothing happens to them. Now think about a whole bunch of people of color doing the same thing. I would hate to even think what would take place with that. You know,
right.
It seems to me it's to shoot first and let's talk about it later. You know, let's take it to court, because 99% of the time the court's going to be in our favor anyway. You know, so I agree with Patrick and stuff, you know, but I still got to get a little bit more hip on this Morris group.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, the Morris group, first you had this NFAC, right? They came out and they're supposed to be, they're talking, you know, they had the leaders talking nonsense. And then people like yourselves, like on online and on radio, we quickly did the research and we found out this, who the guy who ran it, what he was about and his background. So people quickly just kind of faded away from that group. So they had to come up with it. To me, it seemed like they had to come up with somebody else, something else. So what are we going to do next? What are we going to do next? Aha, we came up with Black Lives Matter. Let's come out with Black Guns Matter. So now they have a guy who's going on TV wearing a backwards baseball cap. I mean, this is the most stereotypical thing. It was almost like a TV character that the way white people think black people would act if they were, you know, this guy's going on TV with his baseball cap turned backwards, talking about, you know. And then on one interview I saw, he actually had his hoodie on in the interview. His hood was pulled over his head in Fox News station and giving an interview with a hood pulled all over his forehead. Like, I was like, you can't make this stuff up. You can't make anything goofy like this up. Like, I mean, it was so goofy. I was like, this is obvious that nobody's going to fall for this, right?
You know what it's all about, Patrick? It's all about them selling their content. Okay, to them 80 million people that were supporting, like, Donald Trump and them other fools, you know, you got 80 million people and stuff. If you put the right content out there, then you're going to have a whole bunch of stuff that's going up. So
right.
They're trying to sell that content and stuff. Just like one of the clips we got, we're going to be talking about is that critical race theory, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, what the heck? You know, it's a part of history, so why wouldn't you want your kids or anybody else's kids to know about what happened in history unless you want to repeat the same history, you know? So they come up with critical race theory, and what is I don't know.
You just said the important thing they came up with. And there's nothing that we haven't been talking about forever. The first thing when you hear something new, they're going to say this is this, this is that, and then they're going to try to make people take sides. The first thing that we should do is when we hear it, we should say, what is it? What is it? And try to find a definition for it. And where did it come from? Where did it start? Who started this? Who started this critical? Where did it come from? Where did these words come from that we all
absolutely
have to know? Black people have been talking about how we've been mistreated since we've been mistreated. We know the words to use. We know what happened.
Yep. Yep.
Why does somebody need to come up with something new, something catchy? Something that all the media outlets just start using at the same time,
and then we woke, Patrick. Okay, now you got Mitch McConnell and all them people talking about the woke theory,
talking about
and
it,
throwing in at the same time they throw in the critical race theory, okay, to make it look like. Okay,
mm-hmm.
This cliche about you being woke and stuff. Now we woke, and at the same time, stealing everything is not locked down. Okay,
and
that's what it's all about: thievery, stealing everything is not locked down.
Yep, and we had what happened to because we were using the term racism, white supremacy. See, they never liked that term. They don't like those terms. They hate that. You say that, they stop and it's just silence. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. Hey,
chin drop.
And guess that came from us. That came from Brother Neely Fuller and Dr. Francis Freshwelding. That came from us. Those are our terms from our intellectuals that talked about what we've been talking about for the longest time, right? They were that's our, we know where that came from. Critical race theory, that didn't come from us.
Hell no. It came from this white guy.
When people say critical race theory, we should say, well, we don't know what that is, but I'd like to talk about the system of racism, white supremacy. How about that? don't know what that clip is. Let's talk about the system of racism and white supremacy. How about that? And you're going to find that they're going to run from it. They're going to get quiet. They're going to run from it. They're going to start hiding from it because that's not what they want to talk about. They want to come up with something else that turns everybody's attention toward this critical race theory so they can start this talking in circles. We don't know about that. We don't know about what you're talking about, but we know about what we're talking about, and that's what we want to talk about. We don't want to talk about that.
But, Patrick, you know, the reason I decided to do this kind of show, man, was the fact that to educate our people as to what is going on. Do you know we got so many of our people and stuff, they are actually brainwashed by this deal where they can talk and they can come on and then have that same narrative that you heard on Fox News and everywhere else and stuff, you know, about what it is. They got the same theory about that. Oh, really? Instead of talking about the facts, what are the facts of the matter? Just like George Floyd being killed, now they're trying to got one of my clips is about Kamala Harris explaining the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. I think that we need to examine that, okay, because seeing our own localities, like here in this little small town, I'm talking to black people about that act. They don't even know. No, well, you know, they're going to do what they want to do. They understand. If we get educated on the situation, then we can take it to our senators. We can take it to the city council. We can take it to these people, you know. But it just seems that it don't surface on some people, you know, what that is all about. And then why we shouldn't we have something to say that these white cops just don't be killing people? And the thing they throw back in our face is, oh, you got as many black people killing black. You got black men killing black men. Well, the statistics are it's about the percentages are about the same. You know, we need to be working on black folks killing black men and stuff. But then if you want to dodge that question and stuff and go into all of these other narratives, you know, that really don't do. But we need to understand what is taking place so that we can have a consensus on what we need to be doing. You know, I don't think that's there. I think black people and stuff, we're divided amongst themselves because we don't like who we think is running the show or something like that. I don't know. But that's what this show is all about. Let's just try and come together. Let's talk about it. That's why I want to know what you're doing in your community. I'm always working in my community. And you know, the light bulb in that, working in my community is 99% Hispanic, okay? I probably got three or four black people that's living here. That's not going to stop me.
Yeah. I mean, it's... That's true. I mean, if really what is it that we want? I mean, but personally, I would like to have a situation where you can't really start with a total clean slate, but try to figure out what it is. Because the first thing we got to do is figure out what it is we want. You know, a lot of times what you hear is you'll hear people say, you know, things like we want better this, we want better that, we want better education, but we never – really put any meat on those bones. We usually would think about more of money, right? So when we start thinking about things, we think in terms of money, but education is not about money. Education is basically really about, more than anything, the curriculum.
Yeah.
What do we want our young people to learn, right? Forget the money for now.
Right.
Let's figure out what it is we want them to learn. Right. We'll figure out how much it'll cost, and then we can figure out how to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to first figure out what it is you want. You can't, because if you don't figure out what it is you want, to at least to a certain extent, you end up going around in circles. You can go around in circles for hundreds and hundreds of years because we never define what it is that we kind of wanted. So my whole thing is, one of the things I would like, you know, there are, and I don't know if people are, there are towns that are for sale across the United States. There are towns for sale. They're little nothing towns. There's, like, nobody in them, like, old buildings and stuff, like, you know, little one-horse towns that are for sale. There's really nobody there. I mean, I would like to go to a, you know, for people to start to migrate and say, okay, we want to do this. We want to move to this place, you know, those who want to move, and just start building and just own it, right? Just a little town and start building it the way that we would want to build it. I mean, down to, you know, making sure there's no trash on the streets, making sure things are clean. Everybody has their ideas, or most people, like I'm sure you two do. You have an idea. If I was to start over and I was to start a little town, how would I do things? How would I start that? Like, what kind of things would I put in place that would, you know, and it can be just, you know, hey, you know, I want to, some people may say, hey, I want to start a little town and near where maybe some black farmers are since they're hurting. And we just start buying produce off of them directly from the farms, right? See, that's something I heard from somebody. I said, man, that's a good idea. So we all got great ideas. We just haven't come together
to put them together. Yeah.
We haven't come all together. We all got great ideas. There's some people that have great ideas let's use this kind of concrete for the sidewalk. You know, we do some sidewalks because it doesn't stain as much and it looks better because that's their business and that's what they – so they think about these things, but it's never connected because our ideas are not connected. You know how, like, when you're driving in a car and you just start thinking about stuff, right, like better ways to do stuff, and it just – you know, you kind of think about it, and then it just kind of goes away because there's really nowhere to take it or put it, right? So, you know, I think that's the first thing we need to get together. That's the thing. Right,
but you
I should do that. I don't do that.
You're absolutely right, Patrick. You know, I think the same way, man. The problem is and stuff that now you got to be selective about who you sit down with and who you talk to. Even though sometimes I just forget that, and I just hate to see people and stuff talking stupid. You know. Talking stupid, like, okay, well, what we ought to do is all the black folks in America ought to pick up and then move to Africa. Okay, well, what are we going to do in Africa? You know, we built here. You're from here, you know. We just need to build trust. We need to build trust in each other and stuff. My rule and stuff is that, number one, if you come to me and you need something and stuff, then I might help you the first time, but if you're not showing me that you're willing to help yourself, the only advice I have to you, Seth, is that you got to get out and work just as hard as everybody else. Does that mean I'm going to throw you off the track or whatever? No, that means that I want to be around people and stuff that we have the same goals involved. You know?
Right.
And that encourages me, okay, about people to be able to, you know, be on this show and then have people like Patrick and then Raymond and Anthony and them will call in. And so that fortifies what I'm doing, you know, and fortifies what I'm doing and stuff. So I think it's trust. It's a matter of trust. So we need to be talking about that. Anywhere you are. Anywhere you are, what are you doing wherever you are? You know, I think it all adds up. Every little bit that we try to help and better ourselves, it adds up. So I think that's what Patrick is trying to say. And that deal of just moving to a town, some black folks moving to a town and then making the town grow and prosperous and stuff, you know, that's a good idea because 40 million black folks, we only got 1% of wealth in this country. I keep laughing at that. 1% of wealth in this country, okay, 40 million people, that's because we don't have the money that's going back in our circles, you know. So we need to be able to do that, home ownership, okay. If your kids, if you have a family and you're working and then your kids see you go to work every day, that's a great benefit and stuff to what you're trying to do, you know, to where you're trying to get to. And the only thing else is teach them and stuff. If you go out there and take somebody, you should have to pay, you know.
I don't think we should be beggars. We're not beggars. We just want the same opportunities as everybody else. You know, at some point in life, everybody's born and we go after our aspiration for whatever reason and stuff, you know. And I'm for us sitting down and talk. Like my speech here, the Democrats and Republicans and stuff is, okay, we're divided along these lines. Now, what the heck can we do in this town together? What positive can we do in this town together? You know, if you're not willing to sit down here and talk about it, then I'm going on down the road. But we need some unity and we need some peace, you know, with each other. We need to be real. We just need to keep it real. Just like Patrick said and stuff. You know, you can't believe everything somebody's saying to you. You got to do what? Test and verify. Okay? Test and verify. If somebody comes up and tell you something that sounds like it's a lie, 9 times out of 10, it's a lie. You know? But I like this. I see where you're coming from, Patrick. I'm proud, man, to even be on the same telecast with you.
Yeah, man. I think these are the kind of conversations that need to be had, and for those who, let's say, pick up, and a lot of us are going over there to, you know, relocating to Africa and things like that. I think one of the things we should do is say, hey, if you're going over there, how about we check in once a year and you tell us how it's going? No, like, so we can ask questions, right, while we're over there. Because I think we keep that information just to keep the information so that we can, you know, that we might, you know, it may be helpful one day. So when they go, hey, how about y'all check in with us once a year just so we can ask questions on how much it costs, the food and this and that and the other. And then if we're doing something here and they want to, you know, ask questions, they can ask questions too. You know, that's kind of how you keep that lines of communication open. And, you know, when I hear people talking like you're talking, I mean, like both of you are talking, I mean, it's inspirational. Like I said, we all have ideas. Some people have ideas on what kind of food we should be giving the children, right? What kind of this and that?
Right.
It would just be great to have. And some men are security minded. They say, okay, we got this little town at sundown. We all you know, a lot of the men, we will split it up. You know, you get together and just do a patrol around the town, make sure everything's good. You know, there's like little things like that. Inspire people because it's like, yeah,
keep your hours
saying.
mm-hmm.
You know, me and his brother may have to go out. Okay, it's Thursday at 8. We got to go out and do our patrol around, make sure everything's good. We just go out and just, you know, do a look-see, make sure everything's cool and whatever. It's like those kind of ideas and that everybody has, and I got only a few, but I know a lot of people have
tons of ideas.
Yeah.
Tons of them. About little things, too, about little important things, you know, because it may be their profession or it might be something that they're interested in. You know, some people may meet fitness people. One of the things that's funny, when I was in Maryland years ago, I used to live in Maryland, and there was a, I don't know if they're still doing it, was a community college. And the part of Maryland I was in was, you know, mainly black. So middle class, upper middle class black. So, but just, and there was a community college with a track. And one of the things that I found just amazing, during the week, Monday through Friday mainly, sometimes on weekends, but mainly, people would come home, you know, change their clothes, and go out to the track. Some people would be running. Some people bring their kids. The kids would be in the middle of the track riding their bikes, playing, running. I mean, from older people, look like 80, 90 years old, just out there, some sitting down reading on the bleachers, some just walking around the track talking, right? I had never seen that before in my life. I found that so fascinating. It's 6 o'clock.
Because they put down electronics. Yeah, they put down electronics and just got out and just kind of congregated without really congregating.
Some people are talking. You find older people just walking around the track, talking, you know, just getting a little exercise. Mm-hmm. You know, some people running, some people jogging. You know, like I said, kids in the middle of the track, some people on the bleachers just watching whoever, reading a book or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just found it fascinating. People just socializing, exercising, just really, it was a community thing. And I mean, the track would be packed
nice.
With people. I mean, just a lot of people, right? It was a big track, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of people. And it was kind of a social thing. You know, mm-hmm. after work, every day, you go to the track, everybody's there.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Interesting.
And I just found it fascinating. I was like, wow, like I've never
like
seen this before in my life. Right? So
there's like
little
it.
Things that we can do that I think would inspire, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people. I think it would just be inspirational, to be quite honest. But
yeah.
I like the fact that everybody has their ideas. And if you could say, if you can have a series of meetings and say, okay, there's a fictional town that doesn't exist, but we're going to say it exists, how would we do things in that town? If we were to move there, how would we do everything
mm-hmm.
from the smallest detail to the biggest thing? How would everybody say we should do this and that and the other? And I think that the ideas that we would come up with would be incredible.
Amen. That's Jen.
We're
going to
put
know,
you in charge, Patrick.
I'm going to use that. You know, what I hear you saying and stuff is that we need to find reasons and stuff to get together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we need to build our town, get together and create our own town. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like
I mean,
that.
Yeah, create, yeah.
These,
yeah. And,
these tiny
and
towns.
Take our reparations and go and get our new town. And we can have it called Patricktown, shoot, or Browntown, or, you know, Adamsville, or something like that. Because that's maybe a good start, is that we can, you know, like, you know, start fresh. It's like a new fresh start, like they did the Black Wall Street. Everybody came
yeah.
together, and they chipped in, pitched in, and they had millions and millions going through that area because it was, quote, unquote, it was us, and we appreciated us. And we did us. And then all of a sudden, this little woman comes through and, you know, wreaks havoc on the city. And, you know, one little flame, you know, starts to blame. So it's just crazy.
I'll give you an idea of one of these towns. So there's a town
mm-hmm.
called Henry River Mill Village, North Carolina. Tree Line Street.
Okay.
Nothing's there. It's a bunch of old houses. Nothing's there. A lot of trees, though. It looks pretty, like if somebody could really do something with it. And it's an abandoned
mm-hmm.
community. The whole town, think about this. The whole little town, I think it's probably about 100 acres, is only $1.4 million. People
mm.
can get their little money up. We get it. I mean, think about it. A whole town. You can have your own mayor. You can set up your own, you know what I mean? Like, that's all it is for a whole town.
Yep.
People spend $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 on one house individually.
For sure. Mm-hmm. We have our own carpenters, our own everything.
That's a great
yeah.
vision and stuff, you know. Ain't nothing that we can't do if we put our minds to it and stuff. You know,
that's
right. Where I look at
that's
it.
Right.
We can do anything and stuff. I mean, it's a testament that we black people are still here in America. And I think that if we had outlived our usefulness, I don't think that we'd be.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would have been exterminated everybody. I do. That's what I believe. You know, we're so creative and stuff, but I think that we are divided and conquered. You know, we need to bring that creativity together. And not for us, we had our heyday. I'm talking about for these young people that's coming up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're some bright minds. They don't want them to know about what the history was and how far that they can go, you know. But,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, and you can put your young people to work. I mean, my whole thing is, like, let's say as an example, I'll just give an example. Wherever it may be, you move in, you got some
uh-huh.
people that have families, some young men. you know, why are we paying a lot of landscapers to go do some of the stuff? I mean, get those young men out there on Saturday morning to do that stuff. You know what I mean?
Hey,
get the young
there you go.
Patrick, that's what I do. That's my hobby. My hobby is doing that. And I have taught quite a few kids. I've taught quite a few kids in my profession, you know, to be able to do that. You know, I love that.
Yeah. But don't you see that? So you know more about that than I do. Wouldn't that be cool if it was a time that you could just have, you know, where we all get in and pitch in and do the bushes at the edge of the town or in the public spaces or whatever. You know, we all pitch in, you know. You got to come out through so many hours or whatever, right? So the men get, you know, we get out there and we do what we're supposed to do, right? We get the young boys out there to help. Make sure the streets are clean and, you know, all the leaves are off the street. You know, just little things, man. Those kind of things really build communities. And people can feel proud about coming out. It doesn't have to be a bustling town with brand new buildings and this and that and the other. That stuff, you'll get there. But just seeing, you know, something that you belong to that's just starting out. I mean, that's great. Now, some of the old houses you may have to tear down and, you know, of course, build up. But, you know, it gives a sense of community. I would love to live in a place like that.
Patrick, you just gave me my next show, Creating Our Own Town.
I mean, it's almost like doing a Habitat for Humanity type of thing to me.
Yeah.
It could be,
but I think it's much more. I mean, it's much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because unless we understand that we can create and that we can develop, you know, it's all about putting our minds, like the three of us right now on this line. I don't know who else is on that on this line. Hell, I'm saying.
Oh, we have a few more people.
Okay, but I'm saying we
that's 100 right there.
We put our collective abilities together. I think that's what Patrick is saying. Our collective abilities and stuff together to produce, you know. We can't do anything. I believe that.
Yeah, people
are
tired.
Our own new town.
People are tired. I mean, there's a lot of people who are just, they're just sick and tired. They're tired of the rat race. They're tired of this and that. They just want to be able to sit out their front porch and say hi to their neighbors as they go by. And, you know, a lot of us are tired, and that's not even a young or old thing. A lot of young people are just tired of it. A lot of things are going on.
You know, this pandemic has really searched my souls, man, all the way to the death. You know, I have my brother die, and a lot of people that I know die behind the virus and stuff. But made me just start thinking in terms of what the hell am I going to leave here? What do I want people to be talking about when I leave here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's about
trying to form community. Mr. Parks, what is your dash going to be? You've got your birth date and you've got your end date. You want to know what is your dash going to be? That's what I've been told. What do you want your dash to be?
That's a good one.
I'm right on it, you know, and I think that we don't have, you know, I think we've been forced and stuff to be living in a bubble, you know, like right now this town, everybody's going crazy, talking about 45% of this town has already been vaccinated. I'm saying, what, 45%? You talking about 150,000 people, 45%? That means it's a whole lot of people and stuff that ain't been vaccinated, you know. So what does that talk about our life expectancy? You know, I'm not living under a fear type of deal and stuff, but I've been vaccinated, and I'm telling as many people as I know that I think it's a good idea that you get vaccinated, because if you don't get vaccinated, I mean, you can be infected, you know, and they got all these different things going on and stuff, you know. So what are we thinking in terms? And then at the end of the day, everybody else is talking about, and I'm talking about privileged people. They're talking about opening up all these stores and everybody going into it and running back and then spending all this money. And, hell, we're spending money with people that don't mean us no good. You know, how come we can't challenge that? How come we can't challenge that to send people a message and stuff that I am not going to spend my money where I'm not, where my money and me is not wanted.
It's no good. Know? Mm-hmm.
But you have people who want to do that. They want to buy Tide detergent, you know. They want to buy the top Kool-Aid grain. You know, we want to go out and get the ABC, what I really, really think of it. That's what I find. Other than gas, because the same people on all the gas stations and stuff for 35, 40 miles around in here. I ain't going to drive 40 miles and stuff just because somebody, Donald Trump, is in bed with on gas stations and stuff, you know. But we need to be thinking about that, you know. We need to be thinking about that. I think it sends a message anyway.
You just brought up a good point. I didn't think about. I don't think about our little town leader's gas station. You just brought up a good point.
Yeah. I mean, some things we don't have to rely on them to get until we can get into a position and stuff. You guys ever see Mad Max? You ever seen Mad Max?
Yeah.
I saw the movie a long time ago. Yeah.
Okay, you seen Mad Max? What was the whole deal was all about? Fuel and water, right?
Fuel.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It was about water, too. It was about water and fuel and stuff. So you had these people and stuff doing what? They were storing up all of this fuel and stuff. And then the criminals and stuff would come out and try and rob and, you know, take the fuel and stuff. You know, well, we could do that. We had to put ourselves in a position to be able to do that, you know, store some things and stuff so that we can get to the next level. Does that make sense to you guys? You know, we got to be frugal about what we're doing.
But, you know, we can also become like the Amish people. Do we actually, you know, if we're just going to be in our own little community, do we need all that unless we're going to go on a trip to visit our relatives and stuff? If we're just going to be in our own community, will we need gas? Except for to run, you know, the tractors and to run this and that if we have farms and so on and so forth. I think we have enough creative and ingenious people to build things that don't need a lot of this fuel.
Absolutely.
You know,
because wind power and stuff like that, that's great.
Yeah, and solar power and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I mean, did we ever think about that? All these wind, I love the wind things, the wind, what are those things? The wind cycles, the wind.
Wind turbines.
Yeah.
Wind turbines.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I would love them. I think they're the coolest looking things.
Yeah.
We just need to go back to what we used to know, because we don't see our children anymore. We see the top of their heads. We see emojis. We see thumbs up. We see this. We see that. We need to come together and learn what we look like. Again, learn to smile, because we don't nurture each other. We don't hug each other. We're just so into our own self. It's just like we forget about other things, you know. And one of our in the chat room says we can barter, too. And that's bartering is also a good thing, you know. But if we come together, if Patrick brought a potato, Mr. Parks bought carrots, if I bought peas, if somebody bought some sirloin, we can make our own stew. And that's what we need together. We need to come together, bring our minds, bring our thoughts, and bring our own resources. And, you know, we won't have to have the people to go around at night, because we're going to already know who's in town, you know. So we should be cognizant of our own self, and it's like, you know, be our own little, you know, what's the one I'm thinking of? Our own little guardians of a little. We shouldn't have to worry about who's in town, because we're all there to do the same thing, you know. And that's another good thing also for the second chance people, our felons, you know, have a felons town, maybe. Where we could teach them to do things, and they could be working in the field. They're already out, you know. Why do they need to go back to jail if we can teach them how to farm, teach them how to do all these things and create, then I think that would give them something to do and they would feel good about themselves. And that's another thing we can do as well is, you know, because felons, they can't get houses, they can't vote, they can't do this, they can't do that, they can't do anything. Then what do? They wind right back up in jail. You know, they do a dastardly deed and then wind back up in jail because they don't feel like their society wants them again. So, hey, we have jail town for all we know. I don't care what it's called. But if we would come together and help each other, I think people would feel better about each other. That's all I got to say about that.
Hey, well, that's you know, I like to be around great thinkers, you know. Mm-hmm. People that like that think on their feet, and then they make sense, you know.
Right.
About what it is that you're saying.
I try to.
It's doable. You know, everything
mm-hmm.
you got to
mm-hmm.
is doable, you know. So that's the biggest plus that we got.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah, but
I'm going to ask Sinful, you have anything to say? Hold on a second, Patrick. Sinful, I know she's been quiet on the line. You have anything to say?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just kind of listening to y'all. I'm trying to, you know, learn more about all this. I really kind of stay out of a lot of the politics things, you know, but, you know, there are pressing matters nonetheless. So, you know what I mean? I have no choice but
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
pay attention, you know. So, I mean, but as far as this, like, I think it's a great idea. I think that's, you know, a wonderful idea in the making. Just how to put it into fruition would be, you know, like several different views in several different ways. And I feel like, you know, as a gentleman,
mm-hmm.
you know, both of them were saying this would be a great way, you know, as you said, is he's going to talk about it on his, you know, make it a topic. And, you know, this is what needs to be done. It needs to be made a topic. We need to speak about it. We need to come together. I mean, myself, I want to get into doing
mm-hmm.
I said I am, you know, doing some DJing and things, but I want to get into, like, women empowerment and things of that as far as pulling people together because I think it's a lot of a problem. We can make these towns and we can do that, but it's deeper
mm-hmm.
issues that's going to keep
yeah.
us to stick together. We can do and build all we want, but at the root of the problem,
mm-hmm.
are they going to stick together?
Mm-hmm.
So we got to make sure that's in line, too.
Right.
Yeah, that's the second
right.
part of
right.
this show, reparations and putting it together. That's the second part of this show.
Mm-hmm.
Putting it together. How do we put it together? We put it together by having this discussion,
mm-hmm.
just like Patrick said. We got to have this discussion and stuff. Everybody come to the table, you know, with that. I think we could design it a little bit more if we find people and stuff with like minds to come to the table with different parts of the puzzle. You know,
right,
what
like
you
the
think
mm-hmm. would be. Yeah, like the people in between, excuse me, I'm sorry, but like the people in between that say, like, you know, like you said, you have the people that have different talents that would be able to do this and do that. Also, you have the different minds, like you said, that would be able to be the mayors or the this or the that. Then you also have the minds who would be able to actually work with the people who would be able, like, we're going to need
mm-hmm.
people at the roots to get the people to get, like you said, get them to see that all this stuff needs to stop as they are trying to use it as an excuse. Like, as the, you know, gentleman said
mm-hmm.
or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I get it, but, you know, yeah, we do need to work on that. That's fine. It's going to happen. But, you know, as far as building and for the people who are in that mindset, everybody ain't going to be, you know, we're going to try to reach who we can, you know, but the people like you're saying and this gentleman is saying, like, the positive people who are in the mindset, that's who we need to come together and pull it first and make the roots, and then we can try to pull
mm-hmm.
whoever we can, you know.
Sounds
right.
good to me.
That's right.
Good to me.
Yeah.
Sergeant Parks, you going to be around to help us do that?
Who?
Who, me?
No, Sergeant Parks. I asked him if he's going to be around to help us do that.
I am here. I'm at your disposal. That's the way I look at it.
Yep. You know? We have questions, and we know, like, okay, if we're trying to do this, then, you know, we need to see where his perspective is and how, you know, what he thinks, you know, is good.
Well, no, just come, you know,
say
I
that
think
again.
Just come with your own perspective. Everybody just come with your own perspective, and let's figure out amongst us, and that's who's sitting down now. I'm not talking about taking a whole year to try and build a whole brigade of people and stuff. But I'm talking about let's figure out the remnants of this, you know.
Okay.
What do we need to do in order to get the ball rolling to be able to do that. Okay, so we got to come with some substance mm-hmm. in what it is that we're saying. And please, I don't like to talk to people and stuff that are you can have an opinion and stuff that's way out there, but try and have a general consensus of, you know, where we are. Like Patrick came up with, number mm-hmm. one, we were talking about unity and black people having some form of unity and stuff and knowing that we can do something on our own, that we can create from our own. So everybody say what they got to say, mm-hmm. put it on the table, and we vote on it or whatever and stuff, and then move out on our first step. This is what we're going to, the first step we're going to do, because we got to get some victories. We have to have some mm-hmm. victories. That's what I tell my basketball team. You know, one of the victories I tell my basketball team, and they're just third graders to fifth graders, y'all. They're not high school. I tell them this stuff is that we got to create a victory, okay? Number one, we already victorious because all of you guys are here, you know. Number two, now we need to form a team consensus and stuff on how we're going to work and get to where we want to go, you know. And then I keep drilling them and drilling them and drilling them until they have the concept of what it is they want to do, you know. So I think that we need to, you know, first just think about what it is we want to do. And then, like, it's four of us on this line, and the four of us can already say, okay, it's a good idea, Sergeant Parks, that you can go ahead on and then create our own town, and then I go ahead on and create something like that and get with you guys and say, what do we need to add to this, you know. And then let's call it, and then the next time let's talk about it, you know. And how many more people can we bring on? Make sure that we can do that. I think it's forming unity. Okay, as we go, ultimately we might not get a chance to go to that place where Patrick said, what was that, Henry River Village? Henry River Village.
Who,
Patrick,
me?
Is that what?
I don't know if he dropped off, but a lot of times the area that he's in,
So in order for us to create that, what are we going to be able to do? The way I'm thinking and stuff is that we put together something and then call people in to say to talk about this town. What do we want to see in it and stuff? Let everybody say what they want to see in it. Write it down and then see how we can bridge, you know. How can we bridge?
Right. Okay, I don't know who that is. Okay, that happens, Patrick. Hold on a second. Patrick, hang up, because that's you calling in again.
No, I'm calling Patrick. Inez, can you hear me?
Greetings. Yes. You've reached 647-204-6050. Please leave a message, and I'll get back to you at my earliest convenience. Have a great day.
At the tone, please record your message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know how that happened.
Well, we can invite him back anytime.
Yeah, he's a wonderful speaker. He calls in quite often into the show.
I like his common sense. It ain't no riddle to what he's saying.
Right.
You know.
No, not at all.
So that's good with me. Okay, so
Can I say something?
Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Parks, on your next time you do a show, we need to include Dr. Steele, we need to include Ronnie Marshall, because they do have the access to the only black-owned bank in Dallas, Texas, to get whatever we need to do what you're talking about doing with in creating our own areas. Now, also, they have purchased a large piece of land where they are going to put their own gas station,
You can buy your condos. So there are, that is in play. So we need to include them in this conversation since they already are doing this. And, of course, they take investments. So if you want to invest in your own gas station, yes, we can do that. So this is already in play. So, but I'm glad you guys brought it up because it's something that I know about, but I haven't shared it with you guys. So your idea is already been, and we're working on that. Now, also I wanted to add, we are going to be working, and I will be talking with Mr. Park and putting together something for us to do together by bringing us together. If it's a cruise ship that we go on for brunch, if it's just get together in an elegant way and have a good time and talk about these things. And, of course, yes, Do It All In Mall will sponsor this. So I'll be talking with you more about this and how we can bring people in our community together so we can talk with them, not just on the radio, but also in person.
And Patrick is back. Welcome back, Patrick.
Yeah, sorry about that. I had to drop for a quick second.
That's okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
That's okay. You know, we were just having a discussion and stuff on the foundation for creating our own town, you know. And I just mentioned this stuff that we should start with the four of us on this line. And you guys give some input. You could probably, I know you're going to be able to reach out there and give some input of what it is you want to see, and we put it together, and then we come in, and then we talk about it. And then if necessary, you guys want to bring other people in to be able to discuss that. Mm-hmm. We'll get Sharon to bring Dr. Steele in and investment people in at the right time. We don't want to put the cart before the horse because sometimes, When you're just trying to sit down with people for the first time to talk, you run them off, you know.
But no, so I think what I'm saying is listen to how they are already doing this development.
Established.
Listen to somebody that's actually in it and doing it. Plus, since they have the connection to the only black-owned bank in Dallas, Texas, and since they are connected with us. Let's listen to their education of what they are doing. Because they're already part of the radio station. I wanted to add, another good thing is, especially to our young people, even our old people, getting them to invest in property together and maybe live in that property for a year to 2 years to help buy the second property for the other person to move into their own. And that's a lot of people of other national races are doing that. And that's something
we as black
people should look at.
Okay, that's
okay.
Fine. We don't want to overload the system, okay, that we're trying to create and then destroy it before it starts. So we're going to have to start somewhere. I feel comfortable with everybody on this line right now because we all seem to be thinking about the same thing. So how do we keep that momentum going and get it to blossom? You know, I'm not saying go bring in the big guns and then have it feel, because some people are not going to be able to invest. You know, I can do some investment, but some people are not going to be able to do that. We'll kill them right off the bat. If you come on the line and you say, we're investing in A, B, C, and D. No, we got to do the investment
other. Mr. Park, that's what we have to decide. Do we want to work with the people that don't want to invest in us, or do we want to work with the people that do?
No. See, you're getting it all wrong. That's not what I'm trying to say.
You're getting twisted.
I'm not trying to say that. I'm trying to give us some success. I'm a military man, so if I'm going to train for success to be able to get a mission and stuff, I have to have all the resources I need and the logistics
in ducks
and
stuff in a row.
To be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If I run out there and I ain't got the beans and the bullets to try and do that, then I'm not going to make it. That's what I'm
that
saying.
That defeats
I'm
the
saying.
Purpose.
Let's build this. Yeah, let's build this. Let's build this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, where we're comfortable with it, and then we'll let it branch. This ain't gonna happen overnight. Do you think it's gonna happen overnight,
no.
Patrick?
Mm-mm.
No, I think what you do first, anything that you do in your mind first, right? So anything outside of nature,
and then jot it down.
If you look around, anything around that's not nature, like trees and stuff, and somebody had to think about it before they built it. Your house, your fan, your bed, it had to be thought about. Somebody had to
everything.
Put it together, draw it out, everything, right? So the first thing, only thing we're doing now is the town that we're envisioning right now is in our mind, right?
There you go.
And I think what we can do is we can say, hey, even if you bring somebody in, that's a banker or an investment person, the topic doesn't need to be around necessarily that this town, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. We say, hey, if people were to, if somebody was to do a town and they were starting out, how would you start out the town? How would people invest? Would you need a bank there, like a small branch? How would that branch be able to support the community? What should we be able to do in that branch? You know, and how should we put our paychecks in there? And then how could we run it? Would it be a branch of another bank, a black bank? Like, how would, like, formulate questions, just theoretical questions on how to do something, and then they can start giving us their expert opinion. We're not saying that we got anything done, or we don't even really have to say we're really doing it. We're just saying that it's a fictional town, and it has this many people in it, and the people are from lower middle-class level income, or, you know, some retirees, some young people, and how could we grow? How could we get the money to do what needs to be done in the town? Would it have to come through death taxes? Would the state get some money? How do we do banking? You know, just all those questions we can put to them so they can say, well, you know, typically you do this and that and the other, you know, we're just writing
you
it down.
Start here
you
first.
Know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And we can just have a conversation.
Okay.
Finance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
we do
and
have a new
thing.
Caller on the line. Oh, okay. Go
okay.
ahead, Patrick.
No, one more thing.
Go ahead.
We also got to learn from the past. So when I talked about having security detail, we got to think about what happened, you know, what happened in
right.
Tulsa,
right.
what happened in these other places. Now we got to keep that in mind.
That's
so
that's
we got to start learning
yeah,
from the past.
That.
Yeah, so we got to start learning from the past. And I just wanted to say that so we could
right.
talk.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you. So we do have a new caller on the line with the last four of 7,000. If you want to tell us who you are and where you're calling from, please.
My name is Robert. I'm in the chat room, and I'm calling from Southern California. And thank you for taking my call.
Hello, Robert. You're welcome. How are you? Robert and I have been talking on and on in the chat room, so he called in, and he wanted to voice his opinion on what we've been talking about. Go ahead, Robert.
Well, I you know, I'm still getting my feet wet on the discussion, and my understanding is talking about starting a business in another town.
Starting up a whole new town.
Oh, wow, that's really big. Yeah, that's a huge commitment.
You
got to
think
big. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. And you're right, but I have to get out of my comfort zone. So this is probably one way of doing it. The resources for your real estate is going to be really, you know, where is your water going to come from?
Where's the water going to come from?
Your water. Where's the water going to come from?
So what we were discussing, Robert, was basically just a fictional kind of, hey, what if you bought a small town? Because there's a lot. We started talking about just, you know, there's a lot of small towns for sale in the United States, and people are starting to buy them. I don't know if you've heard, but even in the part, there's a part of Wyoming or North Dakota where people are buying. Wealthy people are buying towns, And it's this really small town. There's these really small towns that are going for sale for like $1-2 million kind of thing. You know, old buildings, old houses, nobody's really there anymore. Sure. They're kind of one horse town. And if you were to buy a town, how would you, you know, so the thing is, how would you do it, right? So if you say that there's old houses there, then there's already water lines there, right? And there's all, you know, there's already those things there. So, you know, how could you buy a town and then get it going again? So that's kind of the gist of it.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought about that's going on, that people are buying towns. That's a big investment again. And, yeah, there people have money to do that. I would have to think of the developer. What kind of developer is going to come in your town to help you get the landscape going? I mean, even though there is one already started, you're going to pretty much want to just tear all down, though. Because you really don't want to keep all the old buildings and everything and just jump into town and say, okay, we own this town now, but everyone could stay. There's too much problem there. Because with the buildings, there's going to be a code enforcement. You have to start completely over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. This is
correct.
We're not talking about nothing that hadn't been done. You know.
Okay, no problem. I got you.
That's the power of thinking and then gathering the resources and stuff to implement any kind of plan, no matter what it is you do. You know. But
right.
It's not a reality thing that we're actually talking about. Basically, how do we form unity, okay, to get like minds and stuff to sit down together to do the best job that we can wherever we are.
I think, no,
yeah.
This is great. Never thought of doing something like that. And, you know, you'd have to get a town hall going, see how everyone, communication with everybody is very important. And how you can grow. That's huge. Because I imagine a lot of these people that did buy these towns, I guess, nowadays, they don't do that.
Yep.
They just kind of take over, and I'm sure it's our town, and you all can live here, but there will be changes.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
That's life.
Mm-hmm.
That's life in anything you do. You know, this pandemic has showed us that, we can't live like we used to live, you know, in the past, and we have to take a whole bunch of precautions and stuff now. You know, what we're doing. We got to take more things seriously. But the gist of the conversation is let's come together, like minds coming together and stuff, and then create what we would need in this town. So, of course, we'll bring in professionals and stuff to talk about different things. But it's more or less a conversation that's open to what would your ideal town be like? Okay, if you had to be a part of a group to think about creating a town, you know, that we were going to be able to like Patrick said, check and make sure that we had the best security for the town, which comes with safety and stuff, you know. And then people are going to be able to move into this town and it not be a trashy town, you know, be a town that we can prosper in. Churches and schools and some kind of municipal situation so that we can get the best out of what is taking place. That's the kind of town that we're talking about. Okay.
Okay. No problem.
Everybody is correct. Anything you add to that, anything you add to creating something else is good, is a great start, you know. And then we'll do the democratic deal at the end of the day, vote on. Yeah, well, that's what we'll do. Oh, or that's what we won't do. You know, I think that's the only way that we're going to be able to do it. But this is just about forming like minds and stuff to be able to do it. And then I'm hoping that you're going to feel being a part of this group that if you're not doing something in your own community, you know, that's helping mm-hmm. people, you know, then maybe you should be thinking about it. That's my hope. That's
right.
My whole show,
right.
Guys. And my whole show is, what are you doing mm-hmm. in your communities and stuff to be able to do that? And if we can do this fictitious town, we might even dream enough to be able to make it take place, you know.
Come
but that's not important.
Mm-hmm.
What's important now is that we sit down and we had a conversation and stuff so that we're able to understand. I think that we could do that.
Yes.
Because I think everybody in your
it
personal life.
It piques an interest.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything in your personal life, even people that don't think that they can add anything and stuff into it. I learned playing golf, man, you know, four ball golf that, you know, you get people that don't even know how to play golf that during the whole round, they contributed. You know, they made a putt or they made a chip or they did something that contributed to
right.
our success. You know, we don't do too good. We don't actually win anything, but we get to say, wow, that was pretty good. We had fun.
It's hard to find someone to pull the pin for you.
Yeah.
I know that.
Okay,
that's
make sure you don't leave a divot.
Okay, so it seems that we're running out of my clips and stuff. I wasn't really we weren't really intended to go through all of these clips. You know, they were just I came up with them so we could have some point of discussion, and I think that what we need to be
I
doing.
I love the
stuff.
Discussion we're having.
If I have a situation and stuff, okay. And I want to solve it and stuff. I want to go to the most impressionable, most knowledgeable people and stuff. You know, somebody's been there, done that, the expert to find out how I can do my dilemma, how I can, you know, get some answers and stuff. So that's how I base these
uh-huh.
scripts on. And they're just like what is taking place, you know, in the world, how you feel about different things and stuff, you know. So, and is
mm-hmm.
we should just go to the next clip, and I don't think that we're gonna finish
Which is,
all of these. But let's go to.
That's fine.
Let's talk about the House approves commission to investigate January 6th. Well, okay, I'm gonna let you guys decide. I have the House Approves Commission of January 6th. I have Trump Organization's Weisselberg Pleads. And then I have to talk about
Scottie Pippen.
Bill Jackson, a racist. And then John Lewis, the Voting Rights Act.
House pushes to restore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the critical race theory with Mark Lamont Hill.
And the critical race theory. So you guys decide. Just pick one, and we'll go to it. what do you want to do, Patrick? I'll leave.
We have about 20 minutes or so.
I'll say the critical race.
Race theory?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Race
theory is. Okay. Princeton. Okay. And this is a Princeton professor explains critical race theory with Mark Lamont Hill. And the definition of critical race theory analyzes the role of race and racism in perpetuating social disparities between dominant and marginalized racial groups. Its purpose is to unearth what is taken for granted when analyzing race and privileges, as well as the profound patterns of exclusion that exist in the U.S. society.
Anyway, I decided to get someone on the show tonight who is an actual expert on critical race theory and much more. This way we can all understand what critical race theory is about and how we can develop a better judgment about the current push to ban it from schools in the red states. So joining me now is Dr. Imani Perry, professor of African American Studies at Princeton University. Professor Perry, I'll say Dr. Perry. I know they say PhDs come a dime a dozen. I don't buy that. So I'm going to say your expertise matters. And I'm going to ask
you
very clearly, what is critical race theory?
Okay.
What is critical race theory, Doc?
Thank you for having me. So the most straightforward way to explain critical race theory is to begin with the civil rights movement, right? So the victories of the movement, which we all know, are found in federal legislation, Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act, but also in anti-discrimination law, essentially laws that declared Jim Crow policies unconstitutional. So after that moment, we begin to understand, of course, that black people suffered many other forms of injury and had many systems of disadvantagement and inequality in their lives, right? And so legislatures and municipalities and organizations began to make specific efforts to target African Americans with programs to address current and past discrimination. And they faced a major conservative backlash. And the way that backlash was formed was saying, well, if you make programs to target the discrimination experienced by black Americans and you don't include me, white person, then you are discriminating against me, right? And so they begin to attack programs like affirmative action and Upward Bound, et cetera. And the Supreme Court of the United States then really fails the civil rights movement by basically treating targeted programs to address racial inequality as the same form of discrimination as Jim Crow laws, right? That they all, both are subject to immediate scrutiny, the strictest scrutiny. So we get to this point, and then civil rights lawyers and scholars begin to talk about how we have to be able to address subordination, injustice, not just color consciousness. It's not enough to be colorblind. We actually have to be able to address injustice and subordination if we're going to have legal racial equality. And that's the heart of critical race theory. How to think about law, legislation, policies that will substantively respond to racial inequality. And they began to bring multiple forms of analysis to the table: history, narrative, gender, class, showing all the insidious ways that discrimination and inequality have been sedimented in American society, right? And then it blooms in multiple directions, but it is literally just a way of understanding the mechanics of racial inequality and how the law might be imagined to address them. Nothing more than that.
It's an important thing that you talked about, and you laid that out brilliantly. It doesn't really need any addendum by me. But you talked about this other issue of color blindness, which is an important thing, right? Because critical race theory has always rejected liberal colorblind theory. Ironically, because it's always accused of being this wild liberal theory, but in many ways, critical race theory said, hey, wait a minute, colorblindness as the goal, as a social aspiration, is also problematic. We need to actually think about race. Doesn't mean that we obsess about race, doesn't mean that we prioritize one race over the other per se, but we need to think about race as another factor here.
Right. If you want to address inequality, you have to have data. In order to have data, you have to pay attention to where people from different segments of society are situated. You have to be able to look at the relationships between race and health outcomes, race and class, race and educational outcomes, right? And so if you are colorblind, and we have examples in other nations, Germany might be an example, where if you don't actually keep track of race, you have no mechanisms for addressing racial injustice. That is absolutely untenable in this country that has been organized from the outset around racial inequality. So it's a really, it's a problematic form of legal interpretation. But if we go a step further, if we can't even talk about it in schools, right, it actually has the potential to diminish our young people's ability to be sort of active civic participants, to understand the world they occupy and hopefully build a better society.
Speaking of schools, you know, this whole hullabaloo began because Republican legislators said, we will not allow critical race theory to be taught in schools. Now, I used to teach high school. I've studied schools. I know people in school. You know, I want to know where these schools are where people are teaching all this critical race theory. This feels like a solution in search of a problem.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so this, look, this is a kind of conventional right-wing approach where they create a moral panic around an issue that actually doesn't really exist, right? And we can see a comparable move right now in targeting trans teens, right? They take, they sort of make up a problem and then drum up a lot of anxiety and a moral panic around it as a way to detract attention from their own failed policies and agendas. And unfortunately, because we have a society that is in which it's easy to ignite a variety of bigotries, they get a lot of traction out of it. But yes, there, I have taught critical race theory when I taught law school. I taught it many times. I am not aware of it being taught in high schools at all, in K-12 education, and only very rarely in college. I mean, it's not a kind of mainstream. It's not like teaching African American studies. It's not teaching the civil rights movement. It's a very kind of niche field, but it's largely in law schools and in schools of education at this point, graduate schools of education.
So, right. So this is a sort of interesting moment here then. So when they attack critical race theory, it seems like a cynical move then. They don't know what it means, clearly, but they also don't need to know what it means because it seems to be a code for something else.
It's a code for something, and they're also banking on the fact that the general public doesn't know what it means, and that's okay because it's not really a mainstream theory, right? And so, you know, they're drumming up anxiety, and it becomes very difficult for those who disagree with them to even engage because who knows what critical race theory means besides, you know, academics, frankly, and some lawyers, right? So I do think it's cynical. But on the other hand, I do think there's one piece that is very important to be mindful of. It is really clear that they are outraged at the idea that we would teach the history of the nation in an authentic way with all of the details of the injustice, of the violence, of the inequality, of, you know, all of the isms. That is seen as a problem to them. They want to maintain the fiction of this country, the mythology of this country. And that's something that we do have to be very deliberate about responding to. Because we want our kids to be raised with deep and meaningful knowledge.
So ultimately, when they say they don't want critical race theory in school, they really don't want race talk in school. They don't want a racial history in school. They don't want any kind of critical analysis of white supremacy in school.
Right. And I would say yes, all of that, but also they don't want a basically honest history of this nation. Right? I mean, you don't have to have a critical analysis to know that slavery was wrong or that Jim Crow was unjust, right? That's not a deep analysis. That's a five-year-old can understand that those things are unjust. So it's very alarming. I think we have to respond to it, but we cannot be held to their terms because their terms are deceptive.
Professor Imani Perry from Princeton University, thank you for giving us an expert analysis of critical race theory. And making this plain. Appreciate you. All right,
thank
y'all.
You so much.
Let us know what you're thinking. Right. Hit us up.
All right. Critical race thinking. Sergeant Parks.
Hey, what can you say? You know, I'm thinking this stuff that if why not teach history? You know, why not teach history and stuff? I'm not sure that we need to go get into any complications and stuff about what's going on. But if you're not teaching the full history, America, the full history of America, and you're leaving any portions of it out, no matter how dreadful it is, how dreadful it was, you know, I think it's wrong, okay? But what I think basically is that some people are just trying to turn the narrative, you know? They want to turn the narrative. They don't want to talk about things that we should have been talking about. And black people, what we need to be doing is we need to be thinking about, these things took place and stuff with us, but now – what the hell are we going to do now? Okay. We ain't going to pick 40 acres and a mule. Forget that. That ain't happening. You know,
let's invest within ourselves, within our means and stuff,
mm-hmm.
to try and make it better. You know, there's a lot of work we got to do. Hell, all white people
mm-hmm.
ain't racist, you know, and all
no.
black people
nope.
ain't angels. You know?
No, no.
But for the sake of conversation and stuff, though, we need to be thinking about that. And then we need
right.
to be not waiting for them to teach history, to teach black history.
Mm-hmm.
We need to stop waiting for them. We need to teach black history our kids. I teach my kids black history. I got a portion of what
mm-hmm.
I do every
mm-hmm.
month is I send something to the NAACP. We got a newsletter and our website. I send some quiz things about black history and stuff, you know. So we need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Black folks need to be able to do that and stuff, you know. And if the fight end up being where that we can get justice, and I think that we are, more black women have been elected to public office and stuff in the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can build upon that. But if we're waiting on somebody to give us something, you know, I don't think nobody's ever given me nothing except for knowledge. I listen to knowledge. I made everything on my own. Me and my wife, we struggled and we did it on our own, you know. So that's the principle on which I think that we should be looking at, but we should be teaching ourselves what's going on, what happened and stuff. I'm talking to a lot of black folks.
Mm.
They don't even want to know. They don't even want to know. And you talk about slavery. Oh, you ain't going to miss the part. You talking about slavery again. Well, I say if you don't know where you came from, you know, and we are still divided amongst a lot of different reasons and stuff, but one of them is you know, absentee males in the family. And I can keep on going and stuff, you know. Low income, this pandemic and stuff happened to be killing more people of color than they're killing everybody else, which I don't think we're paying attention because there are a lot of people of color saying they ain't going to get the shot, you know. So we need to be cognizant of what it is that we're doing. Like Patrick said, I like that. He's a good pathfinder there. You know, but yeah, we need to be, and then we need to stand up for what we think is right. If you think you don't make a difference in your communities and you're not doing nothing to make it right and stuff, then nothing for nothing leaves nothing. You know,
right.
Do something to show where your heart's at and what you're able to do. Like I told you guys, that my community is 91% Hispanic. You know. That don't
mm-hmm.
stop me from
mm-hmm.
getting out to helping Hispanic kids and white kids and black kids and inner kids and stuff. And notice that I said
mm-hmm.
kids.
It shouldn't matter.
Yeah, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
it shouldn't matter.
What are you doing? That's what we need to do. And I think that everybody
mm-hmm.
on this line, I kind of think you guys are leaning toward that way. And I'm sorry that I was ranting. Normally, Inez would have been a Ms. Park. But yeah, that's the way
I wanted to, but you had a good thing going, so I just left alone.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
No, you're fine. No, no, no. No, I'm not the boss. But no, it's good to hear, you know, what people have to say. And I'm just gonna go down the line and get the last comments as time is winding up, and so the first call that I'm coming to is Robert. Do you have anything to bring, our last comments or anything?
I'll be brief. That lady, she's what is the problem with the dividing the whole nation. And with this critical race theory aspect, I grew up not thinking about different cultures, the differences and everything. Because I have a lot of friends that are different
mm-hmm.
cultures. If this was to pick up
mm-hmm.
speed like it could, I could lose a lot of friends. And that's a lot of work, a lot of people I know that I won't have friends if this is progressing as it can.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's
But we want you to have
different.
Friends.
Okay.
And Robert is from California. And during our chat, he was saying that, it's kind of funny, he said that, you know, for them to have a yard sale, it takes 3 months for them to have a yard sale because they have to go through all this rigmarole. So if he came to our town, he could have a yard sale every day. So I invited him to just come on and call so he can get out of his comfort zone.
And I think,
let me know so I can get some of that Cali sweaters.
Yeah, hey,
I know,
Robert,
that's right.
I appreciate your comments. You know, it takes everybody. Everybody, you have to face the wind and then say it the way it is. And at the end of the day, you know,
right,
there is something we still have in common. You know, right now we're divided along silly lines, real silly lines and stuff. But most of those lines are, it's the wealthy against the not so wealthy, you know,
right,
that's dictating this stuff, what should be taking place. And we don't take, I do, y'all. I mean, they get tired of hearing me. You know, if I feel something is wrong, I'm going to say something, you know. And like I said earlier and stuff, not all white people are racist and not all black people are angels.
Right.
You know.
Angels.
So you have to just weigh that.
Okay.
Now at the end of the day, what the hell are we gonna do to make things better? Yeah. What can we do?
Right,
we just
I agree with what you're saying. I agree with what you guys are both saying, because I think that this division thing, like me and my mother, and I speak about this with my son, and the interracial dating and things of this nature, like this keeps going because they keep bringing it up. We already know it's in the history, and whatever they need to know, they need to be taught at home with a lot of things. If these people ain't teaching them out there, that's your job to teach your child. You know what I'm saying? You can't depend on another, and it shouldn't even be about another race. You can't depend on the world to teach your child how to be. No, so yes, we need to know the history, but they need to stop stressing it so much because it keeps the division going. And this is all learned behavior. All of this, to treat the richer better than the poor, to treat the black worse, or to treat Hispanics worse, or to treat the white worse because some black people don't like them, whatever. You know, it's all just, it, like you said, this needs to be in a place where we need to see again that we are. You know, we just need to do something moving forward to make it better, because this talk about what happened and all that, it just keeps this anger going and stuff, and we just need to move forward in a way.
Let it go. Let it go.
Yeah.
Let it go.
Actually,
let it go. Okay. Say what now?
Say the mic drop.
Yes, that's when you put the mic drop. Patrick, what do you have to say?
I don't really have much to add on this critical race theory. I would just like to agree with what's been said, that we need comprehensive American history, which includes everything. And I think we can probably do it from there. But I don't know about a critical race theory. Even from the definition that she gave in the clip, I couldn't really understand what it was. There wasn't still a really good definition of what.
Oh, sorry.
It
wasn't
comprehensive American history. That's it. Yeah.
It wasn't real definitive.
I don't think he really explained it well enough.
And that's why I kind of gave that definition at the beginning, because that way we kind of had an idea of what direction she was or was not coming from or going. So I was trying to give some type of a definition that I had found. Of course, I Googled it. So, yeah.
Well, you gotta always pay attention to who's saying what. Follow the money, idiot. That's what my grandma used to say. Follow the money, idiot. You know, you gotta be able to do that, and you gotta scrutinize it. You just can't jump on the bandwagon just because it sounds good as of what they're saying. You know, at the end of the day, you got people and stuff that want to sell their narratives and stuff because, well, who are they in bed with and what is taking place and stuff with that, you know? So, you know, it's like I say, it's both. just pay attention to what's going on.
Right, right. Yes. The system does that automatically. But you just have to keep your head on and, you know, pay attention and keep your, you know, always check your six. That's what they always tell me, just check your six. Check your six. And that's, you know, just be aware of your surroundings and check your six, you know, because you don't never know what's happening, what's going on. So, But no, this was a good show. I appreciate everybody being here, being on the show. Thank you for Mr. Parks for bringing reparations, bringing it back together, as you know, because we do. That's basically what we have to do. We have to start at square one and bring it back to the forefront, because a lot of times we have to be the ones who are those creative juices. So, you know. And it starts with things like this, and then we get bigger, and then we have more people joining us, and you know, more people voicing their opinion on how they feel, and you know, no conversation is wrong. And so we just want everybody to know that this is an outlet for everybody to come to, and I appreciate Solarland. Laura just came into the chat room, so welcome Solarland, Lord, and we've been talking about reparations, so I don't know if you have anything to say on reparations in the chat room, but you're more than welcome to contact us or just chat with me as we are online. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Anybody else? Sharon, you have something you'd like to say?
No, it was a wonderful topic. Sharon? Enjoyed it, enjoyed it. Hope everybody joined us for our other shows that you do through the week. We enjoy listening to what you have to bring.
We listen to what we have all of our guests bring, because it's different things, and we get more and more people joining us, so I just appreciate that so much. And it's getting bigger, and our listening audience is growing, and I just really appreciate that. We have three in the chat room instead of just me in the chat room, so thank you, thank you, thank you. What was I going to say? Solar Landlord just left the conversation. So anybody else care to say anything? Sergeant Parks?
Hey,
gonna,
I am
take us out.
Related. No, thank you for everybody. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, what are we going to do about what's going on? Okay. Whether we like it or not, I think we still have a responsibility and stuff to do what's right. Okay? So
right.
I love everybody,
right.
And, hey, I'm hoping this stuff that I can, you know, we talk again real soon. But don't believe that nickel, what they just gave. You better check the nickel out now, because they got some phony nickels going around stuff, okay?
I was going to say, both
but
sides
make
of the
sure
nickel.
There you go. Make sure that it's an authentic nickel, because if not, you could be, you know, selling nickels, false nickels. Okay, I love everybody. Good night.
All right. Thank you so much, Sergeant Parks. This has been your hostess, Miss Inez, owner and fashion designer of Inez Velcro Designs. And you have been listening to Let's Do It Radio down on the homepage of doitallinthemall.com, as well as where you can find out all of our past shows and episodes on demand. We want to thank you, Sergeant Parks, by keeping it really, really, really real and, you know, prevalent on the topic today, which was reparations, putting it all together, bringing it to the forefront. You know, and I had a thought. It was like, I can't even think what the thought was. And to those who are listening to today's episode, and I can't forget all of our callers for joining us. Thank you, thank you, thank you, callers, as well as our worldwide listening audience of Let's Do It Radio, sponsored by Do It All in the Mall. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You can always visit the homepage under doitallinthemall.com, and you can go to the Let's Do It banner. On the right-hand side, you just kind of scroll down, and you'll see the banner on the right-hand side, and you can always click it and join the conversation by listening or calling us at 845-241-9985, as we appreciate all of our callers and our listeners as well. And go ahead and leave your comments. We appreciate the comments, as I'll read them the best that I can, and hopefully can get you to call in as Robert did this evening from South California. Do it on the wall. Do it on the wall. Donations are also welcome as well. You can click on the donate button on the homepage of Do It All in the Mall, and all major credit cards are welcome, Visa, Discover, MasterCard, and whatever else is out there. And also, we do Cash App, and it's $ doitallinthemall.com. So we appreciate each and every one of you for tuning in and listening, and keeping it real, as Mr. Parks, or Sergeant Parks says, keeping it real and hanging out with us on this Thursday. And we will be back tomorrow. It's initially slated for Lee Alston, but he's traveling, so it may be Lee or it may be me. We may have a Freaky Friday, so all of you out there, if Lee doesn't call in, we're going to have a Freaky Friday. And no telling what we may talk about, what we may do. I may have some crazy music, may have some sexy music. So all y'all out there listening, please join us tomorrow night, late night with Lee Alston. And if it's not Lee, it's going to be me. And that is 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Eastern. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Have a blessed and wonderful evening as we take it out. Let me see what we got here today. Thank you, thank you, thank you. That's not what I wanted to do. Sorry. As we are going to take it out with a commercial created by Lee Alston and his wonderful voice and his music.
Doitallinthemall.com. Doitallinthemall.com has partnered with over 5,000 of your favorite stores and businesses nationwide, such as Mary Kay, Avon, Amazon, among many others, to help make a positive impact within our communities. Proceeds from purchases made on doitallinthemall.com are funneled back into the community. Afrocentric, apparel, automotive, beauty, home goods, food, drinks, games, gardening, and so much more at doitallinthemall.com. So what are you waiting for? So come on and do all of your shopping right here in the mall at doitallinthemall.com today.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, thank you, thank you. As I said earlier, I thank you all for allowing us to enter your homes, wherever you are, and maybe listening, chatting with me, tuning in, and for calling into Let's Do It Radio, sponsored by Do It All in the Mall, which has been in business for 13 years and is a shopping mall that is safe and secure. It's online. It's 24/7. I have been your hostess for the evening, broadcasting to you worldwide. My name is Miss Inez, owner and fashion designer of On Ice Velcro Designs. And I'm also found on the homepage of doitallinthemall.com under the client section, as well as the other entrepreneurs that you hear throughout the week. And I want to shout out this evening, everybody. Hello. Again, thank you, thank you, thank you. Please be safe. There was a earthquake up in the northern part of California, which my cousins who were on the line said they had a magnitude, I think it was 3.4 magnitude. So hopefully everybody is safe there. And we want to pray for Surfside as well, for all of them still trying to do the rescue. Please be with those families who are waiting for answers. And I want you to have a good evening and keep it real. You can always visit us and just do it. Do it. Do it all in the mall, whatever you do. Just do it. do it all in the mall. Please be blessed, stay blessed, and have a good evening.